Yo, 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 everybody, what's going on? Welcome to episode 56 of Climbing the Ladder. I'm your host, Chanman V. And the boys are with me, as always, Richard Lewis and John Clark. What's up, fellas?
Having a good one. I'm loving the fact that when every episode, John's got a different background. He's always doing it in a different place.
It's like he's on tour. Like, what's... I changed seats. I am on tour.
He's on tour. Is there a crackling sound? I don't hear it. You guys have crackling sound?
I don't either. Sound.
Anybody else on stream hear that? I don't know. I don't know what that is, if it is.
It's but, just that dude. That's what I reckon.
Yeah, yeah. So I didn't shave this week. I don't know if you can tell.
Nope.
You see that little bit?
Can you push your chin a little bit closer to the camera?
You can kind of see a little bit. Yeah, it's just, that's about 3-4 days worth right there.
What? 3-4 days? Wow. You're a veritable tiger, man.
Dude, look out, man. Look out.
What is that? Six total?
Six total. Let me count. One, two, three. Oh, man. Yeah, but as you guys can tell, our guest Carmack, who was supposed to join us kind of the first half of the show, is a little AWOL here, right? I think the WCS EU Challenger League is kind of wrapping up, so he should be on, but I kind of wanted to start on time, given that this is, well, I tried to start on time, given that this is a show about production, as Scoots, keeps reminding me, but, so what we'll do is, whenever Carmack does get on, we're going to do a little quick post-mortem with him over the first season of WCS EU, which, I think went phenomenal. And we'll wrap up the show with majority of the show actually will be the production side of it, just the studio productions with Scoots, Trance, and Elliot from NASL. So it's going to be a full power packed show today, and we're just waiting on our guests right now. But in the meantime, why don't we talk about why don't we talk about some news? We don't ever get a chance to talk about too much news on.
You mean filler,
let's,
Chris?
Let's
good
go,
old-fashioned
yeah,
filler.
Let's go. Let's go live on three. Let's go live on three on Climbing the Ladder here. Let's go. So what should we talk about? Let's talk about MLG. MLG and no StarCraft II officially announced yet. Yet we're hearing some announcement about what.
But according to Sundance, everything will be okay. No need to worry.
Yeah, but. Gosh, I don't
know. No specifics, but just letting people know, buy your tickets, get your plane right.
I'm sympathetic, man, because I think this whole WCS situation we've got going on at the moment and the kind of evolving landscape of StarCraft as things stand, it probably makes it a lot harder than it used to be to just announce a tournament with a prize pool, Yeah, seriously.
You can just say that. You know what I mean? Just be somewhat transparent about what's being decided. You know what I mean? Because finding, when there's like little details that haven't been worked out and you're still not basically telling, just even letting us know what's going on, I think overall that's really bad. Because even if they say that there is a StarCraft 2, there's going to be StarCraft 2 at Anaheim. They could have like alleviated a lot of this kind of stress, and I mean, there's some people maybe that have already canceled their trip. Who knows, right?
Mm-hmm. But when a company doesn't announce, that's because they themselves don't know. It's they're not doing it as some sort of prolonged.
Yeah, but just say that. I mean, can't you say that? Can't you just say we don't know yet?
Very true. Sundance could be holding off, and then he's going to announce some huge thing that saves esports.
No.
Well,
it better be something like that. We do it all the time in esports. Esports is the only industry I've ever seen that makes announcements about upcoming announcements. Like, we'll have a fucking countdown, and we get to the end of it, and it's just yet another announcement. Only esports is a dumb enough industry to do that. Like, I don't think anyone else does it, but we do it all the time. So I totally understand why MLG is shying away from, in the absence of having anything to say, just coming out and saying stuff. Because then they're going to get criticized for that. And obviously, there's something going on in the background. It could be talks with Blizzard. It could be negotiations with, other tournament organizers. But something's thrown a spanner in the works, and they don't want to say, because they've come in for a lot of grief lately with the way they handled, the WCS online qualifiers and stuff. So
listen to this rational guy now, man. Like, this guy's turning into an actual journalist now. Holy shit.
What's going on here, man? Don't worry. I'm just trying to look at it from the other way, and I'm not just doing that because I hope one day MLG are going to offer me loads of money, or you know, they're going to let me go to all their events and you know, act like a baller and stuff. No, I'm not just saying it because of that, although that would be nice. But you know, like, think about it. This situation's completely changed. Things are very, very different for tournament organizers now, and the way people have to kind of negotiate and you know, what are we going to have? Are we going to have WCS games? Is it going to be a separate side tournament? If there is,
there's a big difference between just. Yeah, there's a big difference in committing and just saying, yeah, we're going to have Anaheim, and then, you know, it just falling through, right? You don't have to do that. I mean, you could just say, I feel like they could have, in some marketing fashion, PR fashion, say that, you know, we're trying to work that out. You know what I mean? We're trying to figure these things out. And even if they don't know for sure, it's the worst situation for everybody to not know. Like, 4 weeks in advance. That's like the worst situation. Yeah, but
they're included in that. You know, they don't know either. That's the thing.
So we don't know that. It's possible they do.
We don't know that.
It's a safe assumption.
But we don't know that, Richard. That's the whole thing.
It's a safe assumption. Because if they did know, why would they hold it back? It's like you say, unless they're hyping up something massive, which, again, another thing we do in esports, no one has a secret in esports. Even if it's your secret and no one knows about it, you have to put little teaser tweets out. And
yeah, but we're not dumb.
They're not doing any of that.
Okay, so let's say you're right. We're not dumb. I mean, that's definitely an option. Why don't you just tell us that that's the case? You know, just tell us.
Do you know what? They go public and would be happy to tell people that if they hadn't had all of this shit prior with the way they handled the online qualifiers. Because let's be honest, right now, MLG stock, I don't mean literal stock, you know, obviously I'm not saying they floated on the stock market or anything, but, you know, the actual stock of the company is probably a damn sight lower than it was 12 months ago because of the way certain things have been handled of late. And I think in the absence of a clear strategy, because, you know, a lot of people do get on their backs, you know, if they would have come out and say, sorry, guys, we haven't got a fucking clue what's going on, people are going to go, oh, MLG, you know, they're at it again. They're just clueless. They're being run like a bunch of bums, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
It's better to just say nothing. It's like the old saying, isn't it? If you've got, you know, better to remain quiet and be thought a fool than open your mouth and remove all doubt. And it's a very astute tactic given the other two options, I think. So I understand people's frustration, and I'm as frustrated as anyone as well. I'm a coverage guy. I work in that business. I need to know what's going on because I need to plan around it. But I can be sympathetic to the situation of doing anything in the StarCraft space right now because, you know, WCS was a massive game changer and everyone's still adapting.
Yeah, it was. But I mean, just look at the approach. I mean, I wish we had Carmack on here. And, you know, MLG. It's funny because MLG got a lot of criticism in the past for not really announcing their dates early. And then this year, they announced Anaheim, like, plenty early. And it's actually, you know, kind of shitting, you know, kind of kicking them in the ass now because of the whole WCS thing, right? But, you know, but I could put it analogous to ESL, right? ESL, IEMs, they've been one-offs. But, you know, Carmack hasn't said anything about the IEMs, right? I mean, we haven't heard anything about them. And nobody's really asking because of it, right? So. And they have the whole WCS thing too, right? So honestly, with IAM, like, it would kind of suck if there were no one-offs, but I could understand it, given that the WCS is just such a huge, huge investment right now, like, for them and their staff and everything, right?
It's a huge mess.
But with MLG, you know, like, I kind of have that understanding too with them. So, you know, if they said that Anaheim, you know, was compromised in some way, I don't know, I would feel, I would understand it. But at least, you know, just say it if that's the case. You know what I mean? I think there will be a StarCraft 2. You know, there will be a StarCraft 2 event.
There's no doubt about it.
I mean, I don't think there's any question.
No doubt about it.
It's just like...
Absolutely will be. I mean, StarCraft 2, the relationship MLG have with StarCraft 2, if you think about where MLG were, you know, how it was Halo, that really kind of put them on the map. And you know, that is the game that kind of helped them rise to prominence. You know, if you think about the last 2 years... It pretty much has been about StarCraft 2, and I think the work they've done in the StarCraft 2 scene, while not always perfect, it's still been pretty exemplary, and I think MLG is actually a great North American success story in a very unstable industry, in a very unstable economy. MLG have managed to you know, go from strength to strength, so absolute credit to them. But on the flip side, yeah, I do feel at the moment, The one area they're falling down is community interaction and community management. I don't know if that's something they're thinking about, something they're looking at. It's something that will change, though. They always get it right in the end. I mean, that's my experience of MLG. And I just think that, you know, the WCS issues, it does present a unique set of problems that companies like MLG, like IEM, you know, Turtle Entertainment and ESL, they haven't had to deal with these issues before. So it's a challenge for everybody.
Yeah. John, surely you got a comment on that, right?
That they do everything right? That they eventually get it right or what?
Sure.
Well, yeah. Isn't that what you think? Don't you think they eventually get it right? Eventually? Like, if you know, if they fuck up at the start, by the end, it's usually good?
I don't know if they get it right. They just find a way to get people to forget about it and move on. And they do it. They improve on it.
Well, I mean, he's kind of right, Richard, because the memory in esports for the community is very short, right? It's pretty much what's going on right now. You know, what event's going on right now, and then whatever before is just kind of forgotten. And it's kind of what have you done for me lately type of thing, right? So, MLG, we were praising MLG after that first event like crazy, right? And then now it's like, it's kind of different now after all the WCS stuff.
Let's not forget as well. I mean, like MLG in particular have got a very unique set of problems, one that not even, you know, IEM has, and that is that both of their kind of marquee titles now, you know, because they've withdrawn from Halo and, you know, and obviously they've still got Black Ops on the console and stuff, but you know, their marquee titles are League of Legends and StarCraft 2 now. And of course, both of those games have now moved into a singular league that is controlled by the producer, the publisher of the game.
Well, so, I mean, IEM events were all StarCraft.
That's got to be a big issue.
The IEM events were all StarCraft. So, I mean, how's that different? I mean, there's other ESL events, you know. I mean, but IEM was it not? It was all StarCraft, right?
IEM obviously has a League of Legends.
It had the League of Legends. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. Yeah, I forgot about the League part of IEM.
And yeah. If I remember rightly, World of Tanks, I think. Was that
really?
Part of IEM? Yeah, I can't remember. Did that get added on? Did I hallucinate that? I have these visions of the future, John. It's like I just get them and then
World of Tanks is in your future, Richard?
Oh my God.
World of Tanks isn't everyone's future, dude. They're throwing money at everything. So there you go. People say no. No World of Tanks. So yeah, what I'm thinking of is I think it got put in not as an IEM at the LAN events. It might have been an online thing. I'm pretty sure I remember writing some news about it anyway. It might have just been for the Polish event. I can't even fucking remember. Bollocks. I'm probably talking shit again. I'll get all the Dota fans burning me at the stake on a Reddit thread, so fuck it. I'll just shut up. But anyway, I think the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, I've got sympathy for MLG. I think the whole esports scene, especially around StarCraft, is in a massive state of flux. And I think MLG probably is a company that pride themselves on being able to accurately predict the future and know where they want to go as a company. And the current landscape precludes them from doing that. So
I actually, Richard, I actually agree with what you're saying there as far as feeling sympathy for, I can't even say it, for them, because I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, if I was MLG, I'd be pretty pissed right now, actually, because you almost feel like you're getting shut out of doing what you've done best for the last 10 years.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have the same sort of control or even understanding. I mean, nobody really understands what's going on with WCS. No matter how good it looks on what ESL is doing, or no matter how much information they pump out, it just seems like it's a big mess right now. And then MLG gets stuck with an opportunity, but it's not an opportunity that they get to cultivate, that they get to choose how to do it based on their 10 years of experience. You know, WCS is dictating everything to them, and they're kind of I feel bad for them too.
I mean, it's if you tie it to the announcement that they made, and I know if the guys who follow the show haven't seen this, that MLG is going to feature
Infinite
the turbine, devices. Yeah, the turbine DC themed MOBA called Infinite Crisis. It's going to feature on their competitive tour. This is a game which is still, you can still sign up for the beta on it. We've got no idea about its competitive viability or, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, it looks like League of Legends with DC Heroes. I'm actually, I think I'd probably play that because I'm a massive
fucking nerd. A few of the IGL admins have actually gotten an opportunity to try it, and they said it's fun and it definitely could be competitive.
Cool. Yeah, I mean it's a good, definitely a good concept. MOBA with superheroes is obviously a pretty good model or a pretty good design.
This is a money thing. I mean, you know, you see this a lot. It's one of the things that never really gets talked about, but we all know it's going on, and that is when a publisher wants to make a game esports viable and to reach that large esports audience, and more people who make games are wanting to do this, they understand that because esports has been ignored by the mainstream gaming industry for so long, they understand they need to come to esports experts and tournament organizers so they can get that in to the community. And they pay for it. They pay handsomely for it. And that's what's happening.
It's marketing money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. MLG are going to be paid quite a chunk of change to put this game on the tour. And there's probably people within MLG who are thinking, oh, God, like, you know, we're going to get absolutely ripped for this. The community are going to say we're sellouts. But the money's just too good to turn down. And where I'm tying this into what we've been talking about earlier is, if you were MLG and you've seen, you know, well, we got on board with StarCraft 2 and we're slowly having Control wrestled away from us of that product. We got on board with League of Legends. We're slowly having that, Control wrestled away from us for that product. Fuck it. We need to find someone who's going to let us do our thing, but also pay big money for it. And it looks like Turbine were the first people to come and pony up with a game that might just work in a competitive environment. So I think we can link all of these things together and say that right now, you know, MLG... They probably had some great long-term plans because they are a very structured company in that sense, and they're a very, you know, smart company in how they operate. But literally, they've had the rug pulled out from under them, not once, but twice. And now they're like, fuck, what are we doing? Because the next six months, we had all these plans, and they're just meaningless now.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I totally agree with that.
Okay. All right, maybe you've convinced me, guys. But
I hate, though, going back to what you said, Chris, I still don't excuse the fact that they should say something. They should just say something more than, hey, don't worry about it. You'll be all right. I mean, because people are paying for tickets to go and setting up hotels and paying for plane rides. And it doesn't bode well when people start to get frustrated like that. There's already enough frustration going around. We definitely don't need any more of it.
Yeah, no, and I get that. I totally get what you're saying. I think it's probably a frustrating situation because there's nothing more than they're going to want to do than to be able to come out and say things. And if Sundance is probably, you know, if he's the Sundance I know, and I think he certainly is, I think he's probably broken, you know, gone off the script a little bit by saying anything. And he's clearly alluded, you know, in several tweets that, you know, it is going to happen. We just don't know exactly what it is. And he's doing that because he wants to come out and say all the stuff we're saying now. But, you know, he's a CEO of a company. He's got to think about public perceptions. And even when you're the big boss, you know, it's a collective strategy. You've got other people's, you know, other people's input to take on board. You don't just get to, I mean, you know, perhaps the exception of, you know, well, there certainly are some companies that run that way. But I think most companies, it is committee. You have a figurehead, but at the end of the day, it's all run by committee.
Richard, shut your trap.
Oh, God. It's turned
him on
time.
this show just going downhill, doesn't it?
Right. So, what's he doing here?
He looks like a young'un. Is my mic on?
A minute, I thought it was Carl.
Yes,
I mean,
we can hear.
How beautiful is my voice right now?
Chat. Last time you were on this show, I think it was this show. Yeah, you were smashed on red wine. So, do you remember? Yeah, oh, I was on that episode. That was the unfortunate.
There's like a delay here. Like,
Yeah, that's me. I'm muted.
Your Robert Erlin episode. So.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Okay, got it.
Hello.
So, Robert, postmortem.
I'm looking at the stream and I'm like 30 seconds behind.
30 seconds behind? You shouldn't be that far behind. Holy crap.
Yeah, I am. And I hear, so Robert, postmortem. What the fuck?
That's not 30 seconds. That's like 6 seconds. That's normal, man.
He's been drinking wine. It's 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
No. Yeah, I'm going to just close my eyes and give me a question. And
okay, all right. Let's think of a question.
Yeah.
Let's see. Infinite Crisis at DreamHack?
Yeah.
What? We have no crisis at DreamHack, man.
All right, Richard, your turn. Next question.
Right. Well, here's a question for you. Since this is meant to be a WCS EU post-mortem, we're going to look at the ESL's handling of it.
Okay,
and you and the ESL were kind of bidding for that, as we've discussed.
Oh,
and
we're going
to
get this.
Blizzard
right.
decided to go with ESL rather than DreamHack. You're probably in a position to be critical of ESL, and you will probably notice more of the mistakes than, say, me or Chris or John would. So how do you feel about the job ESL did, and do you think DreamHack could have done it better?
I think ESL had done a stellar fucking job, actually. It was good. It was really good.
Mm-hmm.
It was entertaining. It was fun. The only thing that I want to see if they can match us for, you know, the proper EU WC finals with all the pizzazz from last year.
The live event, you mean? Just a big old live event?
I mean,
we saw the finals, didn't we? It was in studio.
No, right? that wasn't the finals. What I'm talking about is the what do they call it? They call it the Grand Slams. It's going to be Grand Slams in Korea.
Oh, yeah.
EU and the US. So that's the big one.
Yeah, that's next week, right? Or I believe. I think it's next week sometime.
I don't know. But, you know, what? I don't want to be EU-ist. But I think EU pulled down the pants on North America and ran a couple of, you know, circles around them.
You think?
Without breaking a sweat.
Oh no! This is going to turn into North America versus EU production value.
Yeah, but you guys, you're so good at doing production values everywhere else except esports. There you suck, donkey dick.
Oh my god! Well, I mean,
isn't that really strange? That because the US has this, you know, tradition of doing really, really good shows production value wise, but when it comes to esports, it's the opposite. Why?
You want my
John?
I think it's
yeah, John. John, you need to answer this. Yeah, you have a lot of answers. A lot of answers.
Well, for so many years, they've just been doing it one way, and there hasn't been any expectation from the community to get better at it. And it's a little bit. I think it's a little bit more fragmented here in North America than maybe in the EU. So it doesn't feel as a community, so they don't feel like their voice. I mean, in EU, I think the community feels like their voice matters more, and they just demand better quality. They want to play and show up, and I think here in North America, we've let some other things get in the way, and production value has just kind of not been at the top of the list.
But I'm talking about, you know, pure you know, showbiz, you know, what the U.S. is famous for when I put on big shows, Las Vegas style and whatnot.
Money? It's the only thing I can
money?
Money? Yeah, money? Yeah. We don't have
the
any.
Money just hasn't been there to do it. Or?
Do you have any money to spare?
No, I don't. I was hoping that you did.
Let's start a Kickstarter. Man.
I don't think it's so much money. It's not so much money. No. It's just, I mean, I hate to put it, but it's just the people who are doing it.
Yeah and no, because it is money. It's budgets. You know, if look at what Riot did in China the last weekend. Dude, That was fucking awesome.
That was ridiculous. Yeah, that was.
And that's
ridiculous.
That's budget and the right kind of people.
But what we're talking about, like the difference in what we're talking about, is not. I don't think it's so much money related. It's just the people that are doing it. I mean, it's just people are working harder or maybe thinking about things a little smarter on one end than the other end. I mean, that's
or they just put more value in it. That's what I was initially trying to say, is that there may just not be as much thought in the value of it here in North America as much as it is in other places.
I don't think it's that. I mean, come on. I think MLG values this like a lot. It's just they're just
but
not
they
executing
what I'm
well.
Saying is, I mean, for 10 years they really have. I mean, it's not like they have a huge amount of competition. So again, they get this WCS. They already have it. No one else in North America is running
sad.
It.
Don't care.
What sort of incentive do they have to put everything into it? You see what I'm saying? They've already got the contract. They already have the community behind them.
Yeah, I don't know. I just jumped into this discussion. I want to hear the abrasive voice of Richard A. Lewis.
Well, I'm not being abrasive tonight. I've turned over a new leaf. I'm going
to
be the
most. Have you not been listening to the show, Robert? I mean, if there is an MLG champion on the show right now, it's this guy right here.
I mean. No, come on. What do you want me to say? I mean, what are you asking me, Rob? I'll answer it, as always.
I don't know, because I it was Trance who asked me to tell everybody on the Reddit thread that don't call me a gypsy. So I went in and said, nobody calls Trance a gypsy but me. And that's why I ended up here. He's really upset.
Trance will be on soon.
I didn't. I've never referred to him in that way. So it's definitely an area that's outside of my expertise.
It's actually my fault because I always referred him to as a gypsy. It's lovingly, but everybody takes after me. And
here's my take on it. I don't think it's accurate to say that the Americans are kind of falling behind in production value. What I think is different, to be honest, is that the Europeans, from my experience, I find the Europeans put out more meaningful content in a less glitzy package. Like when the Americans do it right, it's amazing. You know, we've talked about Riot and the things they're doing for League of Legends, which probably is in terms of esports production. I haven't seen anything that good since I myself worked on CGS. And to put it into context, CGS was owned by a subsidiary of Fox Media, if I remember rightly. They had something like $60 million to spend over a three-year period. And they spent every fucking penny, and probably is a lot more, and most of that went into Fatality's pocket, if you believe the rumors. But and not most of it, just most
all
of it.
All of it.
just all of it. But anyway, and the production value was absolutely fucking awesome because it was a TV show made for TV, and the Americans really understood what they were doing. And
News Corp. So Scoot says News Corp. News Corp.
Yeah, that was it. News Corp. Thank you. Memory's not what it used to be. It's embarrassing when Sir Scoots has a sharper memory than you, by the way, considering he's like, you know, about fucking 2 years away from fully blown Alzheimer's. But anyway.
Man, get the gloves
I love
on,
Scoots.
Man.
I wait for you to come on the show, bro. But anyway, what I'm trying to drive at, this long, convoluted point, is just that I think the Americans generally wrap up less. You know, they've got nothing to say. It's not as insightful as some of the European content we get, but they know how to fucking glitz it up and glamorize it. Whereas the Europeans, you know, we do things, it's a little bit scruffy around the edges. You know, we're big proprietors of bedroom broadcasting. And yet what we put out generally seems to be a bit more meaningful and have a bit more weight to it. But, you know, so I don't necessarily agree with the whole idea about production values. I still think for a large chunk of it, with DreamHack being the exception, Americans rule supreme in that area.
Yeah, I mean, we've been, the MLGs and the IPLs have matched up like well in the past. You know, I mean, the live events have matched up fine. Again, I think it just gets back to planning and inexperience. John, you know, of course, you'll attest to that. Just inexperience in online, you know, competitions and that sort of thing, and just straight up planning. I mean, I think Carmack and those guys have done an amazing job just thinking of every little thing to really satisfy all of, you know, us as viewers. You know, even just like the WCS extra thing they do at the end, that's completely casual. It doesn't take much, honestly, with everything that they have there. I mean, shit, they had, like, Kalaris, like, on camera, like, at the last one. I mean, you know, just fun crap like that. That stuff's so great. We don't see anything like that, you know, coming from MLG or you know, whoever the... I don't know if it's the creative person or what, but it's just different people and with probably the same means that are just producing different stuff. I mean, that's...
I actually think it has to do with historical reasons. We used to waging war in Europe. In the U.S. is one country, so everybody tries to play nice. We don't play nice. We want to, you know, conquer, pillage, and destroy. Nah, I went. Disregard my last.
We're still talking.
Oh sport. My god! I need like a censor button on this guy.
So for a minute there, I just thought we were talking about Crusader Kings or something. Like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, it's esports, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, no, so look, at the end of the day, I think that's wrong as well, because I think the idea of being cutthroat and wanting to muscle people out is endemic within, you know, the American kind, well, all American industries, whereas in Europe, it's definitely a lot more grassroots. I mean, part of the reason probably is why production value for me seems to be a lot less in Europe is because we're still relying on volunteers, non-trained staff, you know, making ends meet, hustling your sponsor, you know, because you met some guy at an event. I mean, like, to give you an idea as well, I mean, like, you know, I've done stuff. I had a sponsorship with Powerballs. Anyone remember Powerballs?
Like the lottery?
The Olympics. No, not Powerball, the lottery. Powerballs, you know, you pull a fucking thing out of them and they go and it rotates inside.
Dude,
you can see how many revolutions you can do.
It's a sex toy?
Yeah, it's like a toy, but they have them at, like, you know, with Guinness Book of World Records, who can do the most revolutions.
Oh my god.
Anyway, it's not even that interesting a story. Okay. It's like you don't even know what they are. Just makes the story
so it's not
suck even more.
And no orifices involved. Exactly.
But anyway, to do my first event as a journalist, to go out there and get content, I wrote off the Powerball and said, can you give me a box of Powerballs? And I sold those Powerballs in the car park at the LAN event to make the money that I'd paid to get there in the first place. So that's how we do things in Europe. I don't think anyone would debase themselves just to get a video interview in America by doing that.
We sell our balls to get the viewership. That's how it is.
And in many ways... It is a very clever metaphor. So
it's a very clever metaphor.
Well, you know, I can't speak for Turtle and ESL, but DreamHack for sure has this mentality that goes back a long while. It's, you know, it's punks. It's you know, it's punk TV. You know, we don't know what we're doing. But, you know, we know what we like, and let's do it. It's like what MTV was in the, you know, early 80s. It's like, yeah, let's run some music videos and let's see what happens. Hopefully we don't turn into MTV in like 20 years. That would be sad.
So what does that mean? So you, I mean, it just means that the Europeans are just closer to the community, have a better understanding of the community then?
No, we CBA.
Right, I'll tell you what it is. In Europe, yeah, we're not afraid of straying over the line a little bit and maybe having a bit of a, you know, right, I guess we're not afraid of necessarily doing something that bombs or saying something that's viewed as inappropriate. And I know Robert's a fucking great example of that, because every time he opens his mouth, something horrific comes tumbling out. And I don't just mean when he's coming up a lung like that. Like,
What does any of that have to do with...
Right.
Any, like, what does that have to do with the difference between MLG and, like, in ESL right, right now? I mean,
I'll tell you why. Because if you look at the production values and you look at what people want to watch, say, for example, ESL, right, like the Naniwa handshake thing, they do a little comedy sketch about it that they write
sure.
there and then
yeah,
in the
I
studio
give you that.
Yep. where they refuse mm-hmm. the handshake. They yep. kind of do the replay. They interviewed that lunatic guy in the crowd who had the T-shirt on. The TLO guy, that guy, who's like one of the most frightening fans I've ever seen in anything. He's like the Kathy Bates.
The man. The man.
Yeah, it's so terrifying, man.
Or that guy. No, it's that guy. That's what it was. That guy.
That guy. So you know, and that's what we do in Europe. I think we're not afraid to kind of push the boundaries a little bit, not to the point where we're going to lose sponsors or anything, not like... You know, we're still very PC in esports because we're scared of all the money flying away. But you're watching American broadcasts, and again, League of Legends, prime example. But fantastic production values. They don't even criticize the players when they make a mistake. They skirt around it. They don't say that was a terrible move. They say, well, that's an interesting move, and they try and justify. No, you just fucked up. But they don't. They think if they criticize anyone involved within the product, they harm the product overall as a whole. And I think Americans are so they do shy away from that kind of, you know, we don't want to call people out.
I totally get exactly what you're talking about, but let's just talk about, you know, that guy thing, right? I mean, there are huge differences. There's no crowd. I mean, there's no setup to even have attendees at the MLG studios.
I think I actually think that's bullying. You know, I feel so sad for that guy. That's bullying. That's e-bullying, man.
That's e-bullying. Dude, I've never seen a happier person being bullied than that guy.
He was like pig in shit, man. Like, literally, the grin he had, like, was just ear to ear. He was loving his moment.
No, but I believe me, I totally get what you mean by that. I mean, even things like Apollo doing analysis and MC just coming and just completely trolling him, right? And that's, like, completely fair game, right? I totally get that,
But there's a fine line between, you know, ass clownery and, you know, being entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true.
I mean, if you want an example of, like, just how, not far behind, but, right, this is going to sound really bitchy, and I definitely don't want it to come out like that, so just bear with me, right? But, you know, right, in Control, I've been one of his biggest fans since he started doing the commentating and analysis, and he's grown in you know, stature, not literally, you know, but you know, personality wise, he's you know, doing more and more events. He feels comfortable now getting up and doing esports related banter and jokes, and everyone in America's like, wow, this guy that we shat on for fucking 2 years is really, really good, and we all love him. We want him everywhere now. We want him to be involved in everything. But that's only happened because, you know, A, he's very good at what he does, but B, there is an absence of that type of personality. And in that sense, you find a lot more of that kind of person that brings that to a stream in Europe, you know. A lot of them, funnily enough, are Brits, you know, like James from the Good Studio, who just has been consistently an asshole. You know, that's his personality, to be an asshole.
Dig it,
he would openly admit that.
Not asshole. I would say, Richard, that taking the piss is an art form, right?
Yeah, exactly right. Yes. But equally, to the untrained eye, when you're taking the piss to such a high degree level, you just look like an asshole. And I know James, if he was here now, would describe himself as an asshole. Like, so I'm not saying, I'm saying it with the greatest fondness. But you don't have that in America. No one wants to be an asshole.
You're a homophobe? You don't like assholes? What the hell?
Stop it. Keep it on point. Right? So...
No. Okay. The
products are very different, and both sides of the wall, we have very different priorities about what we want to put out and what we think the fans enjoy.
It's true. I mean, one's obviously more kind of professional. They're always thinking about just more of a professional look, a professional thing. Oh, look who's here! Look who's here!
Hey! Maybe at the end of it all, man.
This is a nightmare for me. Oh God.
Are we really going to try and go for the five? Holy shit, look at that.
Let's do it.
Comic,
all right, guys. This is like producer challenge. You know, like there's that caster challenge show. This is like production challenge here for me. Oh, my God.
Hey, I like... Can you just leave that photo of me up? Because I look so much better in that photo. It's not
You're
even
young
that
and handsome. You're young and handsome.
Hold on. Let me go to break for a second. It's Jesus like Christ. This is going to be fucking crazy.
Dude,
get some pictures done, man. Like, none of you fuckers have good pictures, man.
What are you talking about?
Jesus. After like a year of doing this, John, you finally get a dang picture done.
Hey, I like my other one, my dot. Can they still hear us?
Of course they can still hear us.
Oh, God. This is not defluffing, though. We're not defluffing.
What? Dude, I got to put something up, right? Like I said, it's Caster Challenge, man. What's up, Mika?
Nothing much. Sorry, I'm late. I got stuck doing Unreal Tournament maps, actually.
Oh, what? God.
What?
Dude, if you would have told me WCS, dude, I would have been okay. I totally get it. Challenger League.
Did you take Time Warp back in 1995?
What the hell?
Yeah, actually, I did. It's 1999, the original UT. I sat down, started editing maps, and I opened my eyes, and it's 9:45, and I was supposed to be here at 9, so... My apologies, guys. I'm a real fucking nerd. What can I say?
You're in good company, bro.
Oh, I don't know. I'm gonna do this.
Hey, Carmac. Hey, Carmac. I stole your spot.
And that's okay. You're cooler than me anyway. So.
Oh man, I'm already using the six man now. How am I gonna do this? How should we do?
I can step out. I'm just here to fill the void.
Yeah. Do you mind, Robert? Because it'd be a lot easier for me.
No. Actually, it would suck if Robert had to step out on my behalf. So how about I do it?
Hey, Carmac, I'm here on your behalf. I just feel, you know, I was filling the void until you stepped on, and I tried to entertain the chat and whatnot. So let's go back to the scheduled programming and.
I agree.
Take care, hug each other, and Richard, don't be such a negative guy against Adam. You never know when we're going to see another one. Bye.
Thanks, Robert.
Peace out, brother.
Robert's so awesome. All right. So
yeah,
well,
the word you're looking for, Chris, is shit-faced. It's just shit-faced. It's all right.
Appreciate him coming and obviously filling the time that we had there, but let me get these things set up now.
How embarrassing is this?
What?
Well, it's more embarrassing that you were messing around with Unreal Tournament.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Kidding me?
Wow, John, look at your picture, bro.
See?
I know.
It took him a year to get that picture, okay? So don't, you know. That's all we need. So we need, you know who we need? We need Helena or somebody to take a picture of you, Richard. Gosh, and then all of a sudden I'd have a picture.
There isn't a lens design in the world.
whatever. All right, Carmac. Oh my gosh, we're gonna have to shrink this down pretty quick. So, amazing event, amazing. I mean, I think a amazing season 1 for WCSEU, and I just want to kind of do a really quick postmortem with you, if you're cool with that. So overall views, what are your general thoughts or just your feelings on how it went?
My feelings, I'm actually quite, you know, obviously I'm happy and satisfied. Also aware of the fact that we got lucky with the final, obviously, yeah. and how the games went. But just one thing to say, the plaudits, all the Reddit love and stuff, that goes away tomorrow if we mess up, so... I'm actually more concerned about that than happy about anything else because, to be honest, I hate the community's mood swings, and we've been doing a good job on many other fronts as well, and this is the first time people take notice. So I'm kind of skeptical whether or not it's going to keep up.
That's kind of shitty. I mean, I don't blame you, but it kind of sucks to have that mentality because you can't ever enjoy your the jobs you do whenever you've had a huge success like I think WCSEU was, and so that's kind of disappointing to hear from me if that you have to feel like that. But you're right.
Well,
your IEM events have been amazing.
Obviously, we're all pleased. Obviously, we're all happy that we actually managed to, get some. Couple of crazy ideas, put them together in a really short time frame and make them work, like, you know, APM counters, the player reaction cameras, the split screen, all that stuff. But again, this today we're the kings, just kind of like Dimaga said in his interviews. When it goes well, everybody pats you on the back, says how awesome you are, and the next day they will, you know, pour a bucket of something stinky on top of your head. So, I'm actually rather busy, instead of gloating and being happy, rather busy making sure that the bucket stays away for as long as possible.
That's cool. Okay. So you talked about a lot of things that, you know, a lot of cool ideas and creative things that you kind of executed in a short period of time. Talk to us a little bit about some of those things. I mean, obviously we saw some very, I wouldn't want to say casual, like, type of things, you know, kind of come into play that I think worked brilliantly for you. But, you know, talk to us about some of those ideas. I mean, even just like having like guys like MC and White Raw and those kind of guys just around and I think impromptu kind of, I felt like there were impromptu type of appearances and things like that happening throughout. I mean, were they impromptu or were were they planned?
When it comes to MC's invasions, they were not planned. Obviously, mm-hmm. obviously White Ra. I felt like I generally love Easter eggs. For instance, I love Tarantino movies. You know how he in Pulp Fiction, there's every single clock is set to the exact same time. He came up with a brand of cigarettes which reoccurs in every single movie, and everyone smokes that. I love that type of stuff. I'm totally in love with that. So this is why we kind of decided to put some Easter eggs into the show, less visible and more visible. I was actually surprised that people noticed White Ra right away, as opposed to, you know, in 2 hours into the show. But maybe it's just his red jacket that's inconspicuous. But what can I say? We just tried to make it as cool as possible and as unique as possible. And, you know, Kenny Gitt came in. David, the other product manager for WCS, came in. We had, you know, we banged our skulls together, came up with some stuff. Actually, for round of 32, we wanted to put a portrait of Tarzan somewhere in the studio where it would be visible in a couple of shots. This is just the type of stuff that I personally love, and we wanted to add as much as possible of that.
When these sorts of ideas came up, Carmen, because I think they're fantastic ideas, was there ever any thought, you know, is this really something we should do? Is this going to come off as too gimmicky? Is this going to look unprofessional? Or were you guys thinking at the time, you know what, this is something different. This is something we want to try. It doesn't hurt us to give it a shot. And you had, like you said, did you have the guys at WCS were on board with some of this as well?
Well, our guys at WCS, the ESL guys
okay.
at WCS.
Okay.
But generally, I mean, if you... whenever I have an idea or whenever anyone else on the team has an idea, we talk to each other and we question each other whether or not, mm-hmm. hey, is this good? Is this bad? Mm-hmm. We were sitting down with Red Eye. Every single time I had an idea, I spoke to Red Eye, and Red Eye would say, no, dude, that's lame. That's not going to work. Or, yeah, why not? For instance, Kennegit, I was the one that came up with the fact that we should put a text on the floor, but I had no idea what. And Kennegit came in and said, hey, why don't we make it a White Rock quote? We make expand and then
nice.
Defensive.
Nice.
And all of the stuff that we've done is a collaboration. You know, we had Red Eye involved, we had Simon, our technical director, involved, producers involved, everyone was involved, and we had big meetings and we brainstormed together and we made sure that no idea was unpolished, if you know what I mean.
Hey, so whose idea was the WCS Extra? Because I thought that was a really great touch to kind of end
Eye.
Every day with Red Eye's.
Red Eye, yeah, Red Eye. I can't stress how lucky we are to have Red Eye in general, mm-hmm. because to be honest, and again, I come back to the, you know, I'm going to whine about the community a little bit. To be honest, North American WCS, I don't find it bad at all. But they could use a host like Red Eye who would make the entire show fluid, make it really, really nice and fluid, because it's about how these segments that you produce, you know, the in-game, the out-of-game, all these things, how you progress from one step to another. And Red Eye has been a fantastic glue that made the entire show flow so smoothly, so, mm-hmm. so nicely. It's credit to him. Without him, it probably would have felt like half as good, probably.
I mean, he's one of the best in the business.
I see Richard nodding. I think he agrees, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's no secret that I do respect Paul's work a lot, and I think the way he's transitioned from being a shoutcaster into being a host and the way he handles himself is brilliant. What I'm trying to think about is, you know, is there a direct equivalent, you know, in America? Is there somebody like a Red Eye that they can go? I mean, a lot of people are saying Clutch. I mean, you know, I think Clutch is good. I don't know if he's in the same class as Red Eye.
Yeah, Red Eye's like, who's better than Red Eye, honestly? Like,
I mean, that's what I mean. I don't know how many people are. Yeah, so. I mean, it'd be interesting to see if we could maybe come in.
We could do it. That's true. That's very true. Yeah, Wheat's an amazing host, too.
I mean. I think Wheat doesn't get the kind of plaudits because, you know, he's back doing a show once mm-hmm. a week, and he's not commentating as much now. But, you know, when he was coming out and doing the whole business that he did for Riot, you know, season two, he's very good on stage. He's mm-hmm. very good with the crowd. And he had the toughest job at all because they fucking wheeled him out and said, right, you got to apologize on our behalf now that it's all gone tits up. So, and he did that. He did that in a way that everyone, I think, there kind of left it feeling, poor Wheat, not fuck Riot, you know. So he's very, very good. I think for me, no disrespect to Clutch, whose work I respect as well, but you know, I think the only person who's even close to Red Eye in NA would be DJ Wheat for me.
Yeah, but the thing is Red Eye works for ESL, you know what I mean? So of course he's in Cologne. That's the issue MLG has, is they don't have these people on staff. You know, they don't even have the best of, you know, they just don't have the best people on staff right now.
They got a real big checkbook, though.
Yeah, they do. True.
It actually makes a gigantic difference that we've got Red Eye in the staff, and it's not a guy that comes, flies in one day before the show, but we talk about it, and he knows the script of the show like the palm of his hand, because he was one of the guys creating it, and that makes a huge difference, because even without, you know, if there's any technical glitch and the production isn't able to whisper into his ear, he still knows what's going to be happening. And that makes a gigantic difference. So I'm just happy we had the host actually in-house.
Yeah, that's the right guy, too.
Make a huge difference.
The guy that works his ass off and super talented and the best, too. So you got it all right there.
That's the thing, though. Like, I mean, Paul always says it himself. It's not about his talent, which is really interesting. Because I think if we all look at Paul's contribution, we just think, wow, he's got a great voice. He's just really, really talented. His, you know, syncopation of speech, you know, his ability to make something exciting. All of this stuff, we kind of just see it as a talent. But the amount of work that dude puts in it's stupid. Like, I was surprised, and now it's just like, really? You still find the time to do these things, you know, whether it's, even when he's commentating on, like, for the EMS 1 LAN finals for CSGO, which, you know, it's not got the same kind of global reach as WCS by any stretch of the imagination, he had a book full of stats, win percentages on maps, you know, guns bought, amounts spent on nades, these like ridiculous statistics that he could work into the broadcast. And 95% of that he stayed up pulling, because, you know, there's no one resource to get these stats from, he's dug out himself, and he doesn't even get to use them because, you know, the situation doesn't present itself or there's actual action to talk about instead. So he puts in hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of work for a thing that he only gets to use like 5% of in his job. And he does it every day, and he's always been like that. And that's why he's the best. I think until people really step up their game, their work rate, you know, that's why. And, you know, Wheat's the same. It's his work ethic that makes him good, not necessarily
his
natural ability.
So, Carmack, I want to ask you about Kolaris and Todd. Because everybody knows Sean. Apollo is just amazing. I mean, Apollo can work with anybody, and it's going to be great. But I kind of want to get your thoughts on the combination of Todd and Kolaris, and what your impression was, how they did.
I love them. Todd's partially my invention, in the sense that wow. I saw him at Home Story Cup, and I felt like he had enough of a personality for it to shine through. Mm-hmm. And he's an extremely hard worker, actually. We've done immense amount.
Mike.
I think your mic went out for a second.
We've done immense amounts of work, and he comes for feedback every single time.
Awesome.
And obviously, he knows everything about the game, right? But he still sits down with Kolaris, sits down with me, sits down with Red Eye, and we talk about, you know, what he can do better, how the show can be better in general. And people don't really see, but if you look at VODs from Group A from round of 32 to Group H from round of 32, the difference is immense between Todd and Kolaris from day one and Todd and Kolaris from day eight of the WCS. He's an extremely hard worker, and Kolaris as well has put in lots of time and lots of work and lots of thought into how to improve himself, and both of them have, you know, space to improve, but I have to say, for the amount of time and amount of experience they have with each other, they are absolutely fantastic together. And obviously, yeah. Apollo came in and made it even better overall, because we had three of these guys and we could shift them, we could use them in shifts. So overall, I have to say that everyone in the team, every single person, has put in enormous amounts of work and thought into what they were doing.
Yeah, I mean, I really, really enjoyed the combination between Kolaris and Todd throughout the entire thing. And, you know, I've gotten to know Johan just a lot better, like, in the recent months, like, probably the last 6 months. And, yeah, I think it's great that you recognize his potential for being a caster, because I actually thought that he, you know, if he just committed to it, he'd actually become like a really, really good one. So that French accent, I mean, how can you go wrong, right? I mean, it's like, I mean, that's something nobody has right now, right? Oh, there's a bunch of English guys, but, you know, whatever for those guys. But he's got that French accent, which is really, really cool. And, you know, when you tell me that Todd obviously contributed a lot too, it's, you know, that's the one thing that we hear from you guys that, you know, we don't necessarily hear from other, you know, other organizations. It's that, you know, everybody contributing to this production is all about making the overall production better. You know, right. What I mean, just going that extra mile. It's got that kind of feel of a, let's just say, a startup company. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, it's a lot of that, where it's just not like, oh, I'm just doing what enough that I'm getting, or just doing just enough to what I'm getting paid for, right?
That they're all in house, though. Well, they brought him in, and I mean, for this, and he obviously contributed, which is great. And a lot of events, even some of the events that I've been at, the casters literally just show up. They're giving a time at which they're going to do their thing, and that's it.
That's probably most events, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's not
almost
uncommon.
Every event I've been at. What's odd is a few of the casters that actually took the initiative to say, you know, how can I help? What can I do more? Oh, we should try this. Are now doing things. Alex. Is one of them.
Axel
Toss is one of them. You know, when he did the first Lone Star Clash, he was very much involved in kind of the overall way in which the production was going. I think it helped him along. And obviously, you can see that he works hard, and he is where, you know, he's at a new place now.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Yeah.
Just to give you guys the idea of how everyone has chipped in, even that boarding pass, which the players got, the flight number, the plane number is G226, which is in StarCraft code medevac. You know, these tiny little details, everyone actually tried to contribute.
That's really cool, actually.
And that's actually not something I asked for. It's the graphics, my graphics artist that found it out, and just on her own accord just inserted that in there. And obviously this is nothing that you can see, but it like on the stream or anything, but it's just this level of detail and this level of kind of love, and just something everybody put in something from themselves, and that's what made the WCS special, because everyone really Every cares. Single
they
person
care about,
added
they care about
something,
the product.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it. And for me, guys, you know, John and Richard, like, we before you got on, Carmack, we were talking with Robert about the difference, right, between the European and just, I guess, the NA type of productions. And for me, it's just mostly just the difference between ESL and MLG right now. And I think that is that right there, I think, is the main difference. Like, you have everybody that's involved in the project with the same type of, you know, the same type of passion for to make this product the best it can be, versus just, you know, doing what you're kind of paid to do, right? And that's not saying that a lot of MLG employees are the same way, but I don't believe that every single person involved in the process is a collective unit like it feels like over at ESL right now, and that's the difference, you know.
Well, part of it has to be said that we're a really large company compared to MLG and compared to DreamHack. Not that DreamHack's doing a bad job, they're actually doing a fantastic job, and in many ways they are better than us. But we're a really big company, so it's easier for us than it is for MLG or DreamHack, actually.
Well, it's easier... I mean, easier. Well, anyways, I could go into that a little bit, but I kind of wanted to get one question in before I think we'll have to probably let you go. You know, one of the big things that people talked about, and kind of the difference between, again, I hate to always compare it, but the difference between EU and NA with WCS was just the player pool, you know, just who was available. I kind of want to ask you, Carmack, like, if you were put in the position that MLG is put in right now, which was, you know, you pretty much, you know, and let's just say the round of eight, you had six Koreans and you had, let's just say you had two NA players instead of EU players, actually, as the other folks. Like, how do you work with, like, what would you do to work with that, like, from a storyline standpoint, that sort of thing? Because, you know, that's what a lot of people with MLG is just, I mean, a lot of people are always talking about, oh, well, MLG is just going to be, or WCSNA is just going to be a bunch of Koreans in the end, where EU didn't have to quite deal with so much of that, you know, this type of, this type of kind of, you know, Korean-heavy type of player pools.
Well, generally, I mean, it's difficult for, obviously, compared to us, MLG got dealt a worse hand because North American players are not as competitive as Europeans, and they also had much more, many more Koreans playing. So just because of the server latency being much more favorable towards Koreans in North America compared to Europe. So they got many more Koreans, which makes it difficult, just because it's more difficult to research these guys and more difficult to interview these guys and make it nice and dynamic content.
Yep.
And they had fewer people who could challenge these Koreans. So in terms of content, they had practically less to work with, actually.
Yeah, but what would you do? I mean, I totally agree with all those things. So I'm just wondering, is there anything you can do about that, or do you just have to take that? Because, you know, you talked about the finals being very, you know, something that was very, you know, a little bit lucky that you got Stefano in the finals playing MVP, right? And we saw the viewership number just like spike to 120K, I think it was, and that had a lot to do with
135.
All right, sorry, yeah, all streams, wow. All streams, 135. So awesome number, obviously, right? And it had a lot to do with Stefano, I think, being in the end. I mean, Demog was in the end too; it'd been great, but just the foreigner versus Korean in the end. So that's a gimme. I think that's just kind of a gimme in some ways. That's going to, you know, generate a lot of views. But what would you do if you were dealt the same thing, where it's just like, you know, let's say four Koreans? I mean, I think in past IEM events, has it been like that? I can't remember now. Like in the last year, have we had semis with all Koreans?
Yeah.
Have we?
I can't remember. We have.
We've
had a couple of these events, but it's slightly different if you have a regular show where you have lots of time in between the groups, and if you have one weekend. In one weekend, it's very, very difficult to do anything. Whereas up during the round of 16, every player that got qualified got interviewed on the day he qualified. So within a week from that, you know, from the last group played until the playoffs, we had a week to edit eight interviews, so that the people would have, you know, a bit of a personality in there as well. So, But there's not much you can do, actually. All you need to do is hire a couple of Korean translators, a video crew, and unfortunately, there have to be Korean translators that put in a ton of hours into translating these interviews for the video editors. Obviously, you have to sit there with a video editor as a translator and tell him what every single word means, because if the interview is in English, the video editor can... Half an hour, the job is done. With a Korean, it's 2.5 hours to edit an interview like that, to subtitle it and to cut it so that the language actually stays intact. You know, you have to have a guy that speaks Korean.
Yeah.
Right next to you throughout the entire process, which really makes it much more difficult to actually do something like that. The MVP interview that we did was... I think it took 3 times longer to edit that compared to any other interview. So it's really actually MLG, in order to do what we did with the player interviews, would have to spend much more time doing that. And that's, you know, that's a difficulty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But it sounds like you guys prepared for that, which is kind of key in making sure you have good production.
Well, I mean, we sat down, we figured out what we want to show to people, and we made sure that we executed exactly what we wanted. And actually, that's one of the rare events where it actually came together, and where practically everything we wanted was executed the way we wanted it.
Yeah, yeah. And even the interviews you did with 4GG and MVP, you know, I felt like I got to know particularly 4GG a little bit better. So that was really cool, you know, just with the interviews and everything. The interviews were, like, really high quality, by the way. Really, really good stuff. But all right, Mikhail, we're going to have to let you go, buddy. I wish we had more time, actually, but...
Yes, all my fault. My apologies.
Okay, we'll have you on again, of course. After season 2, right, man? Do post-mortem again with you. And we can talk about how awesome it was again.
and at some point, I'd like to talk to you about what you think of the structure of it. But now it's probably not the time.
Yeah, but that's a whole nother show,
that's
dude.
That's a show in itself, man.
Exactly. But all right, guys, what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll have Scoots, Trance, and Elliot on to go over studio production and all that good stuff. So we'll be right back. Thank you.
mess with my TriCaster over the years. So, but it looks pretty cool, and it was 6-day trials.
Very, very cool.
Scoots beta.
All right, we're live, guys. Oh, we're live, but I forgot to put John. I forgot to put our hosts on here. But while I'm doing this, I want to introduce our new three guests. This is going to be the studio production portion of our show, where we kind of go through the ins and outs of just what it takes to have great production within a studio. And we have three of the best here. And starting off, we got Trance Christian Thomas from, how do you pronounce your last name?
You don't want to try. It's fine.
Okay. All right. Obviously from the Good Studios. He does all the wonderful work over there with the Good Show and all the productions that they do over there, as well as work with Twitch too, which we can talk about a little bit too if we get to it. Second, we've got Sir Scoots. Everybody knows Scott Smith here, who has his own studio in his basement. So, he's currently in Houston. He's currently in Houston.
Can you zoom out of my shot? You've cropped my shot unnecessarily, sir. I don't dig that, man.
You know me, I've got a square. How can I fit a rectangle in a square? Okay.
I'll go full screen. I'm just saying.
I'll go full screen. I'll do bottom third right at the end of a second. And then lastly, we have Elliot. I just want to ask you how to pronounce your last name.
Cutie? It's cute.
I was going to say cutie, man.
It is
like
cute.
Cutie pie.
Every telemarketer since I've been yay big, it's just a problem.
And it's great to have you, Elliot, because everybody talks about the Pulse and everything everybody does in NSL, and nobody knows nobody knows anything about the production team over there. So I know you're behind a lot of it. So it's going to be great to have a lot of the community actually get the chance to meet you and find out all kinds of great things about you, and especially World of Tanks that's coming up.
Yep.
But how should we kick this off? Yeah, Scooch, you want to talk a little bit about what we were talking about earlier first? Why don't we do that?
What were we talking about earlier?
No, you mentioned we were talking about on the show earlier, I guess.
I was asking, are you going to ask us about the earlier discussion, just in the sense of what we just witnessed with WCS, et cetera?
Yeah, sure. Let me get y'all's take on it, because I was thinking about having somebody even from WCS, just from ESL's team on, but didn't come through, and I think their production's kind of spread out a little bit more evenly, too, so it's kind of actually hard to pick, a single person. But yeah, what are y'all's thoughts? We'll start with you, Scoots. What are your thoughts on WCSEU?
I guess the nature of the conversation was a lot of this EU versus USA, which it seemed like Slasher somehow was involved without being involved, right? Because he's always a big proponent of the U.S. versus everybody else. But it was a fair point. I think it is safe to say that in general, when it comes to the big streams, production value, if that's an overrated term or not, between DreamHack and the ESL stuff and WCS, kind of doing a more innovative and exciting job. I think MLG's downfall is that they've fallen into the rut of what their stuff looks like, right? We've seen the look. We've seen the studio. They're producing what they have and what they do well in that sense. But I think the issue is simply that they're not innovating. They're not doing crazy new exciting stuff. They have a smaller studio. They certainly don't have, even Carmack said, the size and scope of ESL as a company is far bigger than MLG. That helps ESL in a lot of ways, whether it's graphic creation, all those things. Their studio's bigger, and I get the vibe that MLG is just choosing not to, try wacky shit, right? For lack of a better way to put it, right? Like, you got to try some of these, production ideas, whether it's a Doom Zoom that I pulled at MLG or a lot of stuff that Red Eye and Carmack and that whole crew pulled last weekend, right? It seems like they're kind of, this works, this looks good, our nightline is good, the view behind. But the problem with that is, Our world is always looking for who's doing something better, right? When I turn on a basketball game, for example, or if I'm watching any of these playoff games, right, of any of these normal sports for the most part, you're never sitting there going, oh my God, look at that scoreboard. That GUI is the craziest thing ever, right? That shit's all gone away years ago, right? We're watching and actively just listening to the sport, or you know what I mean? We're still kind of hung up. not hung up, wrong word, because we can innovate, we can do cool shit. NASCAR and auto racing, I guess, would be the most similar that innovates in real sports, right? And even some X Games shit. But whereas ESL and DreamHack are being very X Gamey, very NASCAR, and let's do this, let's do that, let's try this. MLG is like, this is what we've done for years, it looks good, our TriCasters all work. This is what our graphics look like. This is what our lower thirds look like. Yeah, we'll add this stuff. They recently obviously added some stuff behind the players. But it's a totally different energy, right? If you look at the ESL studio, it's white, it's light, it's bright. There's lots of people. There's lots of energy. That instantly comes through. MLG in its prime is dark. It's nighttime. It's dark blue and red lighting. It's sedate. It's quiet. There is no audience. That just works against MLG. By the nature of where they're doing it, right? Doesn't mean they suck. It's yeah. just that particular, like, and they need a space that's bigger to do something like ESL, or they're never going to be. You know, the 10 guys hanging out in the player room, like clapping every so often and looking up at the camera, is nothing like the vibe that ESL can provide just by having that different space, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's that space alone, and again, as Carmack said, all the people, Red Eye full time, a lot of guys coming in for a good duration, the Todds, the Apollos, instantly makes that vibe way more bohemian. Let's innovate. Let's kick some ass. Like, and it's unfortunate for MLG, right? And that's my rant on it. I think it's unfortunate because years ago, because you can reel this back 5 years ago, right? And you might not like Halo. But Halo streams were better than anything at the time, right? They were producing Halo like you were watching it on TV. Again, looked great then. Now they've been leapfrogged, right? Their whole kind of mentality has kind of been overstepped. It's their turn to now go, okay, we got to reassess how we do our graphics, how we use our TriCasters. Have we spent our money in the right spots? You know, staff, hosting, all those things that was talked about earlier. And if they want to jump forward, if they are okay with that look, because again, it's a very MLG look, right? The honeycomb graphics, we've seen it for about a year and a half now, right? I just think it's a shame that they get compared. ESL's great now, MLG sucks. MLGs have, I think, I have different problems with MLG, and they're not really related to their production, although they certainly could take all the advice that everyone said before and what we're all going to say, and, you know, it would improve. Because again, you can look at what people are, people are doing it better. There's no easier way to say that. Robert was right. Carmack is right. Like, they are, in their own two different production ways, hitting it out of the park. But they actually share a lot of production tech in the sense of what they use and what they do, which isn't a coincidence in the sense of why their shit is maybe a step above of MLG's right now either. Right.
Okay, so
long rant, sorry.
So let me get Trance's opinion on this, and then Elliot, we'll get to you in just a sec. So what do you think of what Scoots has said, and just generally WCSEU?
Okay, I didn't get to watch a lot of WCSEU just because, I don't know, I'm not watching much StarCraft these days, but I did catch glimpses of it, and it did look good. But to relate to the whole discussion of EU, NA, and whatnot, the way I see things is like this. I feel that at the moment, and for the past, I don't know, year, 2 years or so, NA has put more focus into making things look very, very professional, ESPN kind of style, TV style, whereas EU has put more focus on the entertainment value combined with a good production value. And this is where I feel the EU still excels, is the actual getting that fine line between entertainment and production right. Whereas NA still, I don't know why, still strives so much to go, oh, we need to be like TV. We need to look like TV. We need to be ESPN. I'm like, fuck that, man. You don't need to be ESPN. You don't need to be TV. TV is fucking dying. Okay? Yep. You need to listen to the community and take it there to the next level, because the next level and the next step will be online. It won't be on the TV. It won't be on that. As long as you can please somebody on the TV side of things that want to buy your content, great. But don't force yourself to do that. Just keep it entertaining. Keep it professional. And just do, you know, your best, whatever you can do. And this is where I feel most issues occur, like from the way they dress up the casters and the whole way the set looks like. And when there's a mistake, like somebody mentioned in NA, it's all like, oh, pitchforky and stuff. It's like, yeah, it's. Well, I think it's better to move on, you know, take note of the mistake, whatever, play it out in a funny kind of way. People, you know, dig you more for that than just shutting your mouth and trying to turn your back and then coming with later excuses when the whole thing went, you know, is over and be like, oh, sorry, guys, we fucked this, this, and this, but we will remedy it. And next time it happens, you know, people lose patience. So this is at least my whole intake of EU-NA, and hopefully, like, a middle ground can be reached by both parties sometime in the future for the greater good of esports.
Right. So, Elliot, what do you think, man?
I think MLG has spent a lot of time before they got into the daily production space in live event production and doing their events really well. It wasn't until later, and to their credit, they haven't gotten into it until later, that they actually competed in a daily broadcast. And so innovating that space for them, it seemed like, was harder for ESL. And especially, we were competing with them at NASL. It was always about finding the next thing to do, and it was never easy. And it was kudos to MLG for getting past where they were, but now compared to ESL, it's a tougher sell to actually get them there.
And I think something to be said, like, you know, we're talking about MLG and ESL and DreamHack, right? But if you talk about EU, I think Innovator is sitting right here, Trance and the Good Studio, again, kicking ass in all sorts of ways in the content that they're cranking out, right? From a production value to content itself, entertainment, all those things. And again, the budget of none of these bigs. You can look at what NASL was doing and hopefully what NASL will do again. Obviously, more money than Good Studio probably nowadays. But again, the second, like, not the big dog in their country. And again, I would argue that the Pulse was the best daily produced piece of esport content we had going. Untournament related, you know, as it was rock solid. And again, I think if WCS doesn't happen and we're still living in pre-world where everybody is doing their own shit, you see NASL get even crazier with what they do with StarCraft. And who knows what they're going to do, right? Elliot is going to maybe tell us about their new initiatives. But again...
yeah, I'll just spill it all, man.
MLG is not the only game in town in North America. And you're going to see innovations coming out of Beyond the Summit. Like, I think that's the coolest thing about all this, right? Is you've got the bigs with the big money. And now you've got all these, like, second tiers. Again, none of this was here years ago except for a little bit of bigs with some money, right? And some gear. I think some of the best shit was coming out of North America, right? If you look at the Pulse. And again, I can't wait to see what you do, Elliot, with your gear. And again, it's all about people's, like, it's sad that MLG has decided to do exactly what Trance said. Try to look like ESPN, feel like ESPN, smell like ESPN, and because that keeps you in that box, right? And I just said, when you watch a sports thing or you watch an at-the-half report, you're not even going, ooh, ah, look at that transition. Look at how they've done their set. It's just, it goes away, right? And it'd be cool if they got a little nutty. Don't know if they will.
Yeah, so let's talk about, you know, more untraditional, like, you know, kind of setups and shows, you know, not this kind of professional ESPN like. And let's talk about the Good Show, like with you, Christian, and Trance.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the biggest things about your show and why it's so popular is that it has this very, you know, very homely kind of casual feel to it. You know, and you guys are all there too, but you guys aren't all behind. Well, actually, now you guys have a table and a desk for the other guys now too. But
yeah,
before, you know,
right?
You guys were you know all sitting.
Well,
know, talk a little bit about that.
Story behind the table, right? We did this the Western qualifier for the International 3, Dota 2.
Yeah.
And I told the guys, yo, we need to get the studio cleared and back on track, like the posters and whatnot. And them being lazy ass is they just didn't remove the table. So we're just going to leave this table here. I'm like, oh, okay, fine. It looked okay, so whatever. But yeah, getting back to your point, I agree with what you said about the NSL, the Pulse. It was a great produced show, like really great looking. It was, again, pushing for that really pro-looking factor, which is great. Had some entertainment value to it as well. Great. Too bad it's kind of dead now. I mean, I don't know if it's fully dead, but
really?
I haven't seen it happen in a while.
I mean, I can't
talk
day-to-day stuff, but no, it's fine.
Well, hopefully we'll get to see it back at some point.
As you guys are talking about it, it seems like the perfect mix is if you're going to do it professional looking like ESPN or whatever, it's still okay to throw in some non-traditional entertainment type items, some things that raise the entertainment value above and beyond, you know, looking strictly ESPN style.
Well, I mean, the thing is like I don't think the Good Show necessarily does anything like that to, you know, that I don't think anything that they do necessarily from the standpoint of what they should.
Okay, I would say at least the good studio side of things, it's more lenient towards the entertainment value. Like, okay, we can be pro when we have to be pro, but most of the time we're just going with like, fuck it, do it live kind of thing. You know, being whatever, entertainment. People like that, you know what I mean? So we cater to a certain type of audience, other people cater to another type of audience, and most of people are in the middle, are in between. So that's what I'm saying, is like, if you hit that middle thing all the time, every time, it's jackpot for esports. And I'm thinking in the future we're going to see more and more of that. Yeah, from either small time, big time, medium time, whatever, shows, producers, and whatnot.
I mean, I don't know if it's just a case of, like, you know, the kind of American big guys. Like, you know, are they really underestimating the esports audience? Because, you know, what we're effectively talking about in all of this is really fearlessness. You know, like, are we going to be go out there and are we going to be bold? And are we going to, you know, try and walk that line to get that entertainment value rather than be this, like, good-looking, sterile production? You know, how much personality are we willing to inject it into it, and how much are we willing to risk, you know, it going wrong? And I think there's this fear from American kind of content producers at the moment, where if they don't appeal to that lowest common denominator and they do anything that's potentially divisive, you know, again, you're gonna lose audience share, you're gonna lose sponsors. I don't know if that's a factor, but certainly the good thing with a good show and the good studio is their content seems to operate independently of those parameters, and you know they don't give a fuck. They really don't. Well, they're not frightened of the consequences of being bold, and sometimes it can fall flat on its face, and sometimes people can sit there and go, well, that's not very professional. But 99 times out of 100, the overall consensus of the audience who watch it is going to be, that was fun, that was entertaining, I'm going to tune in next week. And I just think, I think it's about, you know, not really appreciating what the esports audience is willing to kind of, you know, enjoy, if you like.
Well, so I want to, you know, you bring up a lot of good points there. And, you know, a lot of this show was supposed to be really all about the studio, you know, the production in the studio. Yeah. And, you know, when we're talking about a good show, a lot of it has to do with just, you know, the people on the good show, like just how they are, you know, how irreverent, you know, James is, and it just feeds to everybody, you know, on the show. And honestly, they could probably get that across even on an online show, honestly. So that part of it, you know, that just not giving a fuck about, like, what people say, and just, you know, just doing just that whole bit, right?
Just be yourself.
Yeah, just being
that's,
themselves.
That's the one thing I don't find okay in esports sometimes when, I don't know, somebody gets a job or something, and he's actually forced not to be himself just due to the thing he has to follow, the script. And he comes as a natural, he comes as, you know, not entertaining. People are like, oh, I'm bored to death.
Yeah, you can sense it.
And that's...
You can definitely sense that when that's happening.
Yeah, so, and then the community appreciates it,
too. If you have the right talent in the place, and you're actually willing to give them sort of a free hand and be like, you know, you can roll with this. Like, please follow these general guidelines, but feel free to just be yourself and, do, you know, pull away. But that's the problem. It's like, you need to have the right people, the right person, and... That's not always the case. Sometimes you have the wrong guy for the wrong job.
Right.
So, yeah, prime example of that, I think, was when MLG actually hired Too Good to cast a Quake, I think it was.
He was not hired.
Really? Wow.
Let's get it clear. He was not hired, A. He did it, B, because Slasher moaned and begged at him on Skype. He's like, I need a co for this shit. Or JP, I can't play with JP.
Yeah.
He's like, okay. I'll...
In esports, that's as good as a contract, isn't it? Though?
Well, you know, yeah, okay. But he was not getting paid at some point. And he was like, I'm just going to go with it and do whatever. Like, I'm going to do my thing. He made a pun. Yeah. MLG didn't like it. It got booted off. Yeah. End of story. Yeah. It happens.
And you know, and that's a prime example. Like, MLG were all, you know, happy to have Too Good there and, you know, to kind of trade on his name, so to speak, you know, because obviously of his reputation and standing within the Quake community. The minute he made a joke, and the joke was relating to MLG delays, he said, I'm used to working without delays because I do all my work for DreamHack. That was it. Stream cut, you're off air. And he couldn't believe it had happened. So it's like... Yeah. That humorlessness, you know, it really isn't what we, you know, it's not what the audience want in esports. We want to be able to laugh at what we do and be able to have fun with it and to play with it. And you can't stifle a personality like James anyway.
Well, I mean,
you know, and if you do that, what's the point in having him there?
You know, another good example is that, you know, you brought up Jeff, like, earlier, right? And just, you know, talking about just some of the great things he's doing now, or just, you know, him getting more casting jobs and hosting jobs and that sort of thing now. And, I mean, I heard rumors, I don't know if it's completely true, but I did hear a little rumors that you know, he got a little shit from some folks from for, you know, what I guess his casting at MLG. And his casting at MLG, like, everybody loved his casting at MLG, like, the live event, right? I mean, he and TB, like, that Ghost of User game was probably one of the best moments in the entire tournament, all right? And that's a pretty good example of what we're talking about here, where it's just, like, yeah. they have this whole feel for it. But, you know, kind of being a little devil's advocate and talking about just more this professional kind of approach to it, the Pulse, Elliot, you know, NASL, I mean, that... You guys took more of a, I think you guys took more of a professional approach to the Pulse, and you did have things like, you know, like Dan's woos and boos or whatever that, you know, yeah. did poke some fun at the community and that sort of thing. But I think you guys did take more of an ESPN-like approach to it, and Morgan, what are your thoughts on that?
Morgan really did. He's the producer there. We had that downtime between season, what's going on. And so to fill up that space, he says, all right, let's do this, fill up a space of a news show that we all want to talk about the news. We all care about this community a lot and want to figure out what kind of show to fit in there. And we had a lot of creative freedom. The casters got a lot of input. We got a lot of input in production and what to do. And we have all these tools around StarCraft that replays, and we have a good post-production team that can generate all this content for us. And so when we looked at doing the Pulse, it was, hey, how can we push our graphics? How can our graphic system, how can we push our edits to make them more interesting, how can we put a show together that really built on what we want to do? And I think a lot of that was going in, we want to be that professional ESPN style, but also be able to ride that line of letting each caster, if they want to do something sometimes way over the line, in Dan's case, then he can do that too.
Yeah, for those of you, I don't know, watched it. He got a lot of crap for that too, which kind of sucks because that was
sometimes when it was deserved, man. That
I mean, but it was kind of the. I mean, that was the whole point of that segment, was just to really poke fun. You know, it was. You're taking it too serious if you're getting offended. I mean, that's the whole thing. But so getting back to the studio effect of it. So Scoots, right? I mean, obviously. You have a studio in your basement, right? And a lot of the EGMC stuff was run through that, right? Talk to me about the difference between, like, you know, your studio versus, like, what maybe, you know, they have over there over at NASL. And,
oh, God, and, I wish I had studio. What was in MLG's office or any, or even I probably wish I had what was actually in Trance's house, actually. I have a small studio. It is, I guess, cornerstoned by a really overpriced piece of gear in the sense of what I do with it. But it's a very small little space, you know, it's all green screen. It's not studio in the sense of like what you just watched at ESL, you know, their studios, for example, or obviously MLG, or even in that sense, like Trance even has more space. He has room for two shots, right? I'd have to go into my living room. I'd have to go to my living room, which I think he's in, but anyway, so it's a small little studio. Again, it was part of my deal with Alice and I got to keep the gear that we had kind of accumulated for this stuff, because some of it was mine coming into EG and a lot of it was purchased afterwards, you know. And I've had a studio here at this type of setup, going on like 6-7 years, because even at Gottfried TV, it started out in my house, then moved into an actual small studio space in Phoenix. But again, I would say mine is very much like a casual, you know, studio. I certainly could try to make a little money and do some weekend cups, but again, it would be a talent only kind of thing. I could have no players here at all. It'd be remote. Mm-hmm. But like nothing like these guys' studios for sure. And again, it's more of a labor of love for me than I kickstarted or I invested or I bought this to try to truly recoup instant money. You know, I use TriCaster, if you're asking those kind of things.
Yep.
All my stuff runs through a TriCaster unit, which I'm slowly diversifying some stuff off of, thanks to guys like Trance giving me advice and Gunrun. That's my little thing. But, you know, again, the guys on the bottom row are all basically the button pushers, or have been button pushers,
yep.
Which is the guy that actually, you know, brings the shots up, manages that stress, right?
That's an odd compliment in this industry.
Dude. Yeah. Because in the real world, like what we do, someone tells us what to do, right? Like you sit at a switching unit, and in your ear is go camera 2, preview camera 3, and all you're doing is doing what that guy says.
Yep.
A lot. I would think all three of us still to this day, for the most part, MLG was my one exception, are the ones that are going, okay, where should I go? Oh, camera 2, and you're doing it yourself. You're doing your graphics yourself. All those things, you know. And you've seen a lot of. my size studios, and obviously, you know, beyond the summits, EG has now opened a studio in San Francisco. That's my studio.
So let's talk about, it's kind of a progression, right? Like with the productions of these things, like starting off is like what I do basically, right? And then the next thing is probably what certain, you know, Scoots is you're doing, and then it kind of goes to like Christian and then obviously NASL, just that sort of progression. Talk to me about just how much the studio actually brings to like the Good Show, Christian or Trance, because again, like I was just talking about, you know, a lot of it has to do with just the way you just, you know, you approach the show and just the kind of feel you want for the show. But what does actually all being there and the studio itself bring to the quality?
I think, at least in our case, it's a bit different because it all started with all of us living in the same place, right?
Yeah.
And literally the downstairs was the studio. So we all, it went beyond a working relationship, right? Like we were all friends and mates and we're like, you know what, fuck it, let's make shows and shit. Let's put it on the internet kind of thing, with James being, I want a studio, fuck ESL. So
of course,
yeah. We were like, okay, sure, let's do it. And I think what makes a difference, at least in our case, is that, yes, like I said, we're a bunch of mates just doing the shows and whatnot. We all talk together about like, what do we want to do? Well, you know, what do you want to cover on this show? And, you know, what are we going to do with it? And kind of that's it. Then we just go live and go with it, literally. Like, James usually drives the show. And from day one, I was the one there just being, you know, okay, I'm going to produce this. I had to take care of everything, setting it all up, running it. So we don't really have anything. Like Scoot said, there's no director, there's no nothing. I'm just doing everything on my own, being like, okay, I'm going to switch this, I'm going to do this, or whatever, you know? So it's that kind of casual, fun, entertaining feel. We've done bigger events as well as a studio. We've produced some ASUS stuff in the past and, you know, and whatnot. And then again, there, of course, the team gets bigger. We have to work with some external people. Things change. That's where you have to put that pro hat on a bit more. But usually, I think it just makes it much easier to work with the same people. You also live for a while and, you know, very good and whatnot. So,
yeah,
I guess that's our unique feel.
Okay, great. And, you know,
I mean, just a quick point there as well, because obviously, you know, as I've said, I'm a big fan of the Good Studio, but there was clearly a market for what they were doing there, and people did want that kind of casual feel, you know, feeling close to the players and stuff. Like, if anyone followed what Dennis of Take TV was doing with the Home Story Cup coverage,
yep,
where he'd literally kind of trick out his house with, you know, cameras and basically just do a kind of, you know, almost like a Big Brother house kind of thing, you know, like it was, he would just be broadcasting and streaming all day, and when the games weren't being broadcast, it would just cut to them on a couch drinking beers, and, you know, at one point they were all doing drinking games with Loop and Louie, you know, like just smashed out of their minds, you know, like, and it was just, there was this real, again, like, you know, like Scoot said, it's energy, right? You know, like, you know that even when the games aren't happening, there's stuff going on. They go out and find interesting things. They drag players in for interviews, and everyone loved it. There wasn't a single person out there who said, you know what, I actually much prefer this more professional, sterile approach, you know, and what the Good Studio do is they're bringing you that pretty much, yeah, you know, all the time, constantly, not just for their own tournament, but for everything that's going on. And right. I'm amazed that someone didn't jump in and do it sooner, because clearly there was a real desire to have it there. And, you know, we've got an embarrassment of riches in Europe in that regard.
Right.
But like I said, you still need the perfect mix of people, the perfect mix of personalities. Yep. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
I guess maybe that's what helped. Like I said, living together, knowing each other so well,
yep,
it helped. Mm-hmm. So if you try and get, I don't know, 5 random people, put them in a house and be like, next week, okay, we're going to do this kind of show, you'll probably epically fail.
It's a reality show.
And yeah.
Let's have none of those in esports, please. Let's, right. Let's not have a reality show in esports. Fuck that. We've already had, what was it, the WCG one? That was fucking terrible.
Yeah.
All right.
How far did the reality one with TSM go? I watched about half an episode.
It's still going, right? Cribs or whatever? Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah,
the Cribs one.
Yeah,
I think it's still going. Last I looked, so it's just YouTube videos versus live, you know, that sort of thing. But okay, next up, so Elliot, kind of want to put you on the spot.
Sure.
You know, we've seen pictures of the studio being torn, you know, like remodeled, right? And you know, of course, now we're finding out that You know, you guys are going to be holding a, you know, World of Tanks competition with this announcement of, you know, wargaming.net and in the North America. So, going to pose the question to you.
Sure.
So, how much World of Tanks are you know, are you going to be doing? How much of the production actually is going towards that versus shows and any other games?
This is all Hero Level Productions does. NASL HLP is also going to be producing World of Tanks. So okay. Beyond that, like Russ's comment was no comment on the rest of them. That's kind of where it is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't prohibit us from doing other things. So it's always open. And I know whatever's going on is still going to go on. And the tech behind HLP is going to be a lot. It's all the same production behind what we put into StarCraft, and it's also going to be applied to World of Tanks.
So I mean, if you don't mind me asking, what percentage of your production do you think will go into that?
All of it on a day-to-day broadcast right now.
Okay.
So that's okay. That's just where we're at.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough.
If that's not too cryptic, I hope not.
Surely somebody has a follow-up. Come on, guys. Anybody jump in?
Yeah, he's not. He can't.
I know.
I mean, what? It's
can't tell.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
So what is the new studio?
It's actually going to be competitive Minecraft.
Ooh, there you go.
Now, can you give us at least a little, maybe just a preview of just what the remodeling, I guess, that's been going on over there? Or?
Sure. I mean, I'm not at the studio right now. I wanted to do this from the studio, but it's just being completely renovated, and lots of loud noises around there right now, people running through the place. Mm-hmm. So it's all going to be set up. We're going to do the quals for World of Tanks on the 5th, so we're all kind of hectically getting prepared for that. And then it's basically redoing the whole – everything you see in the – NASL broadcast is being redone for this World of Tanks thing.
Okay. Excellent. Kind of wanted to get to just ask you guys a little bit about, or have you maybe even you guys kind of exchange a little bit about the technology you guys are using and how big of a factor it plays, and is that what gives you a competitive advantage over others? If you can talk about it, you don't have to talk about it if you don't want to share, but whoever wants to share, just jump in.
I think it certainly does. Whatever workflow you pick, certainly has its pros and cons, right? I'm a TriCaster guy, always have been, but I'd be the first to admit that right now, in this day and age, it's no longer necessarily the best option for stuff. It's a limiter in some regards, and years ago would never have said that because tech has caught up to it and passed it by. And for those that don't know what a TriCaster is, picture the most crazy XSplit software coupled with an input board that lets you put all sorts of audio and video into the back of this thing. So it's a mix, a hardware device as well as a software device. Mix it all up, you got a little TV truck in a box, right? Well, years ago, that was the only way to kind of do this cheaper unless you went to hundreds of thousands of dollars in Grass Valley switchers, right? Like real production gear, like trucks. Well, now you can buy a couple capture cards, you can buy a decent PC, very cheap, throw those cards in, throw some audio cards in there, wire it all through your PC, run something like XSplit. Like I said, I found this vMix thing last night, and you can kind of literally duplicate what TriCaster does, and in a lot of ways, better. And it's cool as shit. This didn't exist years ago, right? So technology, and it just keeps getting tweaked, right? I just got an Elgato game capture card yesterday, right? Now I'm going to use that to encode this little dinky box. I can push a button and it sends my 1080 right to Twitch, does all the encode, does all this shit for me. The fuck magic is this, right? so I think it's come a huge way. And I think, again, MLG is stuck on kind of a TriCaster workflow right now, which has done – lets them do some great things, but literally hampers them in a lot of areas like CG, Chiron generation, like with Trance, and I now know what Trance uses and DreamHack uses and ESL uses to make their graphics and make his thing fly in with Statman Bruno. That shit is fucking insanely sick, right? Also didn't exist all that many years ago. So it's constantly being pushed, right? And my fun is now going, okay, I like the TriCaster for these things. How can I add to it? How can I supplement? What can I do outside the TriCaster? And again, I think if you talk to Trance, he's probably a production nerd like that too. Like, how do I do something better? How do I get my encode better? How do I get this? How do I get that? Where that, like, that's our porn, right? Like when Kenegit tweeted the ESL studio shots, right? Like, that was porn to me. I was like, oh, it looks like he's doing the graphics. What is that guy? Fucking God. Like, that shit gets me off, you know? Yeah. There you go. And on top of all that, before Trance mentions it, free streaming. The advent of Twitch, Ustream, any of those things, not having to buy bandwidth, not having to pay Octoshape for some sort of license, use a peer-to-peer client, night and day for the world we all live in. Absolutely night and day. And again, 5 years ago, huh? What? So, yeah, cool shit. Yeah. I can't wait for 5 more years.
True. To that. He's made a couple of really good points.
Just a couple.
I fully agree on the thing. Well, a few. I'll just say a few. I fully agree on the whole streaming platform thing that really enabled people. Also, the widespread of high-speed internet availability also enabled more and more of these bedroom producers who can, you know, step it up and whatnot. But in terms of actual production, in terms of production value and all this, the way I'm just going to take the whole studio thing. The way we started, we had, let's say, very limited budget, right, when it kicked it off. So, like I said, of course, we couldn't afford a TriCaster. We couldn't afford any of this expensive stuff. So we literally started with something as simple as an XSplit, right, running our software mixer. And then that's where we actually did something really cool, in my opinion, was the first overlay system we used, right? It was custom-made for us by the same guy that DreamHack was employing and whatnot. And we're like, okay, I want these cool Flash overlays, and I want to be able to run them into my XSplit. Like, I don't want to fuck PNGs. I don't want to, you know, run with that because we don't have a hardware mixer anyways. So that's where it all started, and that was step number one. And then not long ago, we went to step number two, like Scoot said, and we're like, hey, how do we make this better? How do we top it off? I'm like, okay, well, now we have to make some money, so now I can invest in some shit. So we bought more equipment. We completely changed the overlay system, revamped them, and like you said, it's like the whole thing is you can make so much more with so little money today than you could literally do 5 years ago.
Yeah,
like,
seriously.
So much more. It's not even funny. So I see more and more people catching on to this these days, and overall, it just pushes one another to do better. Like, you know, you do this thing, what am I going to do next time? It's like, do I really need $100,000 worth of equipment to do the same thing as you do? Maybe I can cut some costs there. Yeah, exactly. Can I cut some costs there and maybe pay off some of my $150 million debt or whatnot and, you know, do this or that? I'm just saying, you know, it's true.
You just Kickstarter, man. It's all good, man, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well... Yeah,
but Elliot, how about NASL? Like, I think NASL probably has, I don't know, more, it seems like it's more invested money into just, you know, the studio itself and probably some of the equipment, so...
I mean, it has, and from when Russ started this a couple years ago, he wanted to do 1080p, and that was 10 times more expensive than that is now, just in terms of the single boxes you can buy to get computer input into a switcher. It's just come down dramatically. And so to do that kind of stuff, it's going to surprise no one that no one went into esports building a studio like ABC or NBC and then figuring out what content to produce. Knowing the technology that you have going into it and what you can do with it, because it's always trade-offs. If you want to do this replay thing, you can't do this camera angle. Or you want to use your key to do this kind of shot with a split screen, then you can't use it somewhere else. And so going through that, like, I think most people have gone from the XSplit level production to the TriCaster to, if you do have it, something like a news van style switcher. And that's where it's 16, 12, 16, 24 inputs is probably the most. And so you get into all of, like Scoot said, with the Grass Valley stuff, that's just gets into 6-digit numbers that you just can't spend on anything like that. So we've seen it come down a ton. And even when we were looking into trade show activations and a lot more stuff, finding stuff that I Googled 6 months ago and found a bunch of tech specs for has just come down another couple $100s. And it's insane how quickly that stuff can evolve.
Yeah,
well, I think everyone's just being forced to be more resourceful anyway. I mean, it's not like everyone, like you said, has huge budgets to put together, to spend all this money on a bunch of hardware. Hardware. They're actually just finding ways to be resourceful and do creative things. It's good. It's good for esports too.
Yeah, exactly.
I always found it amazing how like long it actually took esports to really catch up with video. And like, you know, I've been involved in one capacity or another since around about 98, 99. And I went to university and studied journalism and media. And a large part of that, funnily enough, was doing all this studio setup stuff, you know, learning how to do, you know, live video editing and VT mixing, uploading stuff through fucking Firewire, which is probably outdated now, so I didn't put it in. And what was the other shit, man? Like a chroma key, like a whole module on how to use fucking chroma key, right? So this is showing my age. Like, but when I graduated in like 2002, and was said, right, fuck it, I'm gonna hit esports full time now. I was thinking like video, you know, people are gonna be well into it, but no fucker was doing it. No one was doing it, and I felt particularly well educated and kind of smart about it all. I didn't keep up with it, focused on writing, tried to like kind of get into the whole video thing when it was starting again, like 2006, when people were really trying to, you know, make a big push for their own video content and not just, you know, pander into TV studios. And it was like it had just totally fucking changed. And now I haven't even got a clue, like, and we were so late to the party, but it's great to see people really just raising the game, like, every 6 months, you see something and you go, wow, well, that's like next level for esports, you know? And I think if you look at the speed at which we're catching up TV production, like Scoot says, in a few years, man, we're going to be fucking right on the money.
I mean, we're not even catching for like TV. We're kind of the actual innovators in this sense of the new media, right? I mean, we're way ahead of everybody in the new media space, I feel like. You know, if anything, it's TV that's getting... That's coming into the space a little bit late, right?
I mean, this is going to sound crazy, but StarCraft and video game broadcast, in some ways, have surpassed TV.
Yeah.
Because I contact some of these companies to say, hey, can we do this kind of broadcast? We're going to need it 1080p. They go, no, you don't. You only need 720 or 1080i. I'm like, no, we actually want to do this kind of stuff with the higher tier. And they look at me like I'm crazy because, no, you don't need to do that. So.
Yep.
Yeah, so well, I'd kind of look at it in that standpoint. We're more trailblazers than we are catching up.
Here's a question that I want to pose the opposite way, you know, and when I was with EG, we got a little bit of this grief and backlash, and it's happened several times over the last decade of esports in regards to overpayment of players, right? And I'm going to make this analogy towards these studios, right? There's always talk when a player is rumored to be making so much money that he's killing the ecosystem. He's making – it's not feasible, right? It doesn't have legs. It's not a good business decision, right? Mm. Now, we talked earlier about how we love DreamHack and we love ESL. And MLG, you know, same old, in a rut, need to do something. Come on, kick it up. Boring. But – anybody else worried that the money being spent to up like this leapfrog race is money that's not paid for money, that it's money in the red, that they're fighting for our to make just like Carmack said, I'm afraid next week they're gonna hate us again, right? So is ESL spending too much, and again, we don't know what anyone's paying anybody. Is ESL spending too much money to make this look so fucking good, to have all those staff there, all those people there? Because again, what Trant said about like having to do everything. There's normally like six jobs that we can do in a home studio, right? You're a technical director. You're the director. You're the audio guy. You're the graphics guy. You're the producer. You're maybe partial talent. Well, in MLG's world and ESL's world, there's a separate guy doing all that. There's a guy just on that camera. There's a guy just on that camera. That all adds up, and it adds up to looking really fucking good, right, and very entertaining. Are we in for a rude sticker shock awakening when next year – Blizzard goes, or wherever these people are getting their, maybe, you know, ESL has more money than God, I don't know, but they get paid to do stuff, right? What if they have to step it all back? Are we all going to go, oh, well, fucking A, really? No quad box with fucking graphics on the ground with animated player fucking signs behind them? This is so 2010. I'm kind of worried.
The beauty of it, Scooch, man, is like, right, where ESL have invested the money, and just to give you a little bit of insight, because I do have a little bit of insight about ESL, their finances, they weren't particularly flush, to use a very British term, a few years ago. They've really turned the corner. They got new investment, new title sponsors. They're now in a position where they can pay you know, real money, and they're still employing people. I mean, they're still adding to the workforce. They've invested in the studio, and I've been to the studio in Cologne. You know, it's improving all the time. There's offices above it. It's a great working environment, and they're adding to the equipment and the production values and stuff there. And that's what they're doing. They're investing in the infrastructure. So the idea is, let's say StarCraft II pulls out. Yeah, they may let some of the they may have to let some of the talent go. But the infrastructure, the production value will always be there. Trust me, the people that make ESL look as good as what they do, the people who sit like, you know, the button pushers, like you said, they won't be going anywhere. That equipment won't be going anywhere.
As long as they can monetize that spend, right? That spend that they have to monetize, right? And whereas MLG has decided to keep their spend elsewhere, right? They recreated their little studio. They haven't dipped big into that new production look at all, right? And I was worried that is ESL just like... You know, and again, NASL, same thing, right? If you look at Hero Level is now white labeling, doing other things, because exactly what you just said. For them, for whatever reason behind the scenes, StarCraft has kind of dried up. So they're shifting their gear, they're shifting their personal resources, they're shifting that machine to do other stuff to make the studio, if you will, money. And that's great if it works and it's sustainable. I'm just nervous that, you know, we've seen some bubbles and, like, you set our expectations, and if we have to go back to this, we're all like,
That moment for me was when ESL showed off the 4GG, Stefano, and the medevacs getting killed, and you just saw both of their reactions. Yeah. You saw the replay. Yeah. It was that moment for me was so cool because it added a lot of what you'd want to see in that moment from live TV and goes, yeah, esports can do this. And if we go back, I'll be like, well, it sucks more because now I can't see Stefano laughing. Okay.
Well, it's funny, like you mentioned that, because one of the things that the few kind of critiques that some people have with the ESL, you know, finals was that they didn't have cams, you know, during the entire thing, right? You know, some of the things that we always see at some of these live events is there's always these face cams, which I think don't bring much of anything because they're so dang tiny anyways, right? Mm-hmm. So it was really cool that, you know, what they did with that, which is like just show the game, show what happened, and then they kind of came back to it, right? They had the content ready to kind of, you know, in that replay or to just kind of show exactly, and then... And that was really cool to kind of get just everything in that sort of orderly fashion. So that was definitely really cool. So you're talking a little bit about just kind of live events, you know, versus studio events, and you know the whole expectation thing, right? So Scooch, you've been doing live events lately, right? And Christian, you've been doing live events some lately?
Yes, of course. We have.
Of course,
well, they just did. Define live event. Yeah, live event from a studio or live event at like a venue?
I mean, live events like a venue type of thing.
Because did all the qualifiers.
Yeah, of course, right. So talk to us a little bit about the differences there and maybe where you see, you know, maybe more efficiencies with one versus the other and you know, where I guess the positives are for both.
I'm not going first because I talked to
Kristen, you go.
Okay, fine. the easiest way I would put it is when I have to run a show at the studio or whatnot, I can afford waking up 30 minutes late, right? When I have a show, I'm not going to sleep for a week. That should sum up the beginning of it. So much stuff changes. So much.
Yeah.
can't even. It's a nightmare. I mean, I love it, but it's also a nightmare. And the other thing is, I won't be the only guy behind the production anymore. So I need. Okay, when I'm the only guy running everything, I trust my capabilities. I know what I can do. I know what I can't do and whatnot. When I'm at a live event, I have to rely on other people. Sometimes people I've never worked with before, maybe. So I have to worry twice the amount. I'm like, okay, what can I ensure if this fucks up? And, you know, what's going to save my ass here? And what's going to do there? And the actual setup. And then when you actually go to the production stage of things, there's always something popping up. You know what I mean? Like, there's always. I still remember, and Robert's going to laugh about this, true story. DreamHack Winter Grand Finals 2011, right? The big stage, the hockey arena, the first time they went to the big hockey arena. I shit you not, 5 minutes before the stream was supposed to be live, 5 minutes, even less, the actual encoder had no image and no sound.
Oh, yeah.
I'm talking encoder that would push the stream, right? 5 minutes before it was that fucking... End of the day, I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Plug this, do that. I was like working with their guy at Coral. It's like, you know what? We don't have time to test. No sound level, nothing. We just need to get it working. Like, it was that bad. So sometimes you can get to a point like that where you just need to say, fuck it, I have to do it, and then praise for the best. Like, there's so many unknowns that can pop you know, like every time. So you need to be ready to deal with those. And it worked perfectly in the end. But I'm just saying, it's so much stuff you can account for and so much stuff you cannot account for. You need to be ready for everything.
Isn't?
And that's, I think that's the biggest stress a producer can have. A guy that needs to A, set everything up, B, make sure it runs fine, C, coordinate people. So, yeah, at this rate, I'm going to be like Scoots with no hair.
You know, I can already tell, man. It's coming.
It's coming. Shut up.
you guys need to just don't never leave. Just keep drinking the whiskey. Don't take any big gigs. You'll be A-okay. No gray hair. You'll be fine.
Yeah, but they're fun. They're fun.
Yeah,
I like doing them.
Exactly.
I think we all agree.
All right, Scoots, I'm sure you have a lot.
Yeah, I think they're night and day. If you're producing something in your studio that, you know, again, your gear's all been laid out, everything works, you know, it's repetitive. It's all about workflow, right? Like, there's creativity in production, but it's always backed up by some sort of general workflow of at least how all things talk to each other, right? And that is a set thing in your own world. Like, you know, okay, this is how my graphics come in. If someone sends me a video, this is how I do that. This is how I look at this. Okay, my camera's not looking good. This is how I fix that. The lighting, okay, oh, fuck. James must have knocked the light down behind him again. Fucking ass. You know, like, it's all standard, right? So you learn your domain, right? You load in a day before the event. Maybe you get a full day, you know. You don't know about the internet. You don't know about the power. You don't know if your gear made it. You don't know if you have enough gear to do it outside your own place. Like, it's night and day. And like Trant said, you're going to have help. You don't know them. You might know them, not like them. Generally, when you're out of your own environment, generally there's probably more money on the line, right? At least for me. Obviously, if I'm streaming from here like on a Tuesday night, I don't give a fuck if I screw something up. But if MLG's paid me to do something or someone's paid me, just that pressure alone, right? It's that hobby fun tinker thing to this is work now, right? And there's a little bit of even fun leeway we get at work in our world if we do it like we want versus ESPN. Anyway, but the other side of that is there's nothing like that. To me, it's live TV, right? When I go live at home or I go live in a studio environment or at an event, I'm producing a live TV event to me in the sense that it's like live theater. It's like that crew is walking on a stage. I'm behind stage, but I put someone in front like we're doing live theater. And that Jones is always bigger to me when there's people in the room and there's a bigger audience around. It's hard not to have that, right? If it's just four guys in a quiet little room, even though 50,000 people might be watching, you don't get that energy. It's your own energy. And technically, it's a nightmare. It absolutely is a nightmare. You get told that your bandwidth is, oh, yeah, it's 50 down, 200 up, right. More than you could ever need. And they're like, oh, no, that was 1.2 up, I think.
Holy crap.
And you're like, what? What? You know, and it's hotel internet. It's a nightmare, you know. Like, any of these big guys that roll in, like, bless their hearts. Because, again, my background is event logistics, so it's not necessarily production event logistics. But rolling big machines of people and gear and stuff into cities is what I kind of do, and it's a pain in the fucking ass. But again, that's where that excitement comes from.
Yeah. So, Elliot, any plans on maybe producing live events?
Live events, especially after you've gone from studio to, as everyone said, is just one of the most difficult things to do, especially if you think the day-to-day broadcast experience is going to help you in the live event, because you're just on an island out there. And especially for us, when we went to Canada, that was the biggest set of stuff from going, okay, now you can't just run down to the studio anymore. You can't just pick up an adapter that you forgot. You have to have everything. We had to organize it all to the point where we were set. But it, like Scoot says, it is completely night and day. And I remember season two finals, it was in Ontario, so that one was close. But we had other people working, filling in for, because communication doesn't work the same way in the studio. You need more bodies and more people working all the different moving parts. And so we brought in someone from the post-production team to run the media for the day. And so it's Hero versus Puma finals. And last game, Puma wins, and I go take video, and she hits take, and it's Hero, Grand Champion, NASL Season 2. And I'm like, no. What? And she took it in a second, and Russ comes diving, like, as fast as I've ever seen a guy, his height, like, from the back, falls face first. We get the graphic right a few seconds later, but it was one of the most hysterical, like, okay, this is a whole different ball of wax than a live studio environment, and it's working out those kinks that now seasons later we're at a point where we can produce this, and we know the workflow, we know what we need going into it, and it's still a learning experience every time.
Yeah, those mistakes happen. I mean, every live event that I've worked at, there's always been something that's happened. Always. It just seems like, even if you think, I mean, the kind of the thing that we've said in all the live events I've been to is that what can happen will. I mean, you just, something will happen for sure. But I can imagine, I can only imagine, I wasn't part of the production team by any means at the first Lone Star, but I could just, you know, going back to what you guys are saying, I could just think back how stressed those guys could have been because they were all students. So this was like a huge deal, and just getting it to all work right with having zero experience having done it before. I mean, I think that's why I walked away with it just being completely impressed with what they were able to put out with as little resources and as little experience with it. And it was really cool to see, but man, I don't think I could have handled 10 minutes of it.
So let's be honest. These are the stories that you guys end up talking about, though, right? You know, when you finally get a chance to sit down and share war stories. So, I mean, there's some thrill in it, too, right?
Immediately after the event, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the heat of the moment, you're like, what the fuck?
What did I get myself into?
Yeah. And I can't speak for Trance and Elliot, but like my background is like event logistics, which is a very anal, very logic-based kind of job set and skill set, right? So like those that have seen me on site when shit goes awry, like again, you can just follow my Twitter. I'm often not a nice guy, right? But face to face, when shit is awry and I'm the guy that is in that hot seat, like, oh my god, like Gunrun can tell you stories, fucking AJ Papa from Level Up, fucking Fish Sticks, DJ Wheat, yeah, because you're like a hidden stress guy because no one generally is in chat going, that fucking director guy pushing the buttons is horrible. it's gonna be who's on camera, like, Jeff, what's going on? Total Biscuit, what the fuck? You know, like, and chat gets the heat, but it's generally some guy going, what the fuck? Why is my stream? I'm dropping frames. Holy fuck, what? They can't hear me? And it's, again, if you have a bunch of people that are very, like, you're on the team, like, it's like going to war, right? So if that crew that's with you, are all in sync, it's the funnest fucking weekend you've ever had, right? Because you're nailing it out of the park. You're having a good time. And that shows with DreamHack and certainly shows with ESL that whole crew, even the camera guys you never hear or talk about, they're probably all having a really good time making that, right? And it comes through, stress or not, right? I never feel bad for when I have talent and I go, hey, you guys need to like fill for a few minutes, right? I never feel bad for that because behind the scenes, we're losing our shit, right? And again, it is one of their hardest jobs to fill when they're not talking about the game they know, but like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Very cool. Well, so I wanted to allocate some time just to have more of a kind of discussion between the three of you guys, because, you know, a lot of times on the show, we end up doing like this more of this kind of Q&A type of interview like format. But I kind of wanted to see you guys kind of interact a little bit. So it's kind of open. It's a pretty open table at this point. And, you know, anything you guys want to ask each other at this point? I mean, I know you guys talk a lot offline too. But anything that you might want to talk just on the show.
Okay. I'll ask Scoot something.
Uh-oh.
All right. Shit. Here we go.
Are you coming to DreamHack Summer? Yes or no?
Hang on. Is it a question from you or is this a setup question from James? Let's just get this out of the way.
James, no, I don't talk to that guy. I don't know. He's
okay, good. He's the cat. All
it's
right.
For you. Coming to DreamHack Summer. Yes or no?
As of right now, sadly, the answer is no, my friend. The answer is no.
Boss, what the hell, dude?
This. Why you gotta depress me like that? We're having a good show. Speaking of wanting to be involved in really cool production,
I wanted to see if you're gonna make it around. I'm sad to hear that.
Not unless you need an assistant. You know, I can be pretty cheap.
Always,
for you.
I always need assistance, Robert. And Chef Robert.
Exactly.
I can't help. You guys, you're doing
shit
Yoda,
done.
Right?
Robert's dodging. Goddamn, Robert! Stop dodging questions, in chat.
Robert's like, ask Christian. No, I'm just kidding. all right. Elliot, any questions, Ron? Or anything between you?
I mean, I'm curious how I never got the backstory of how Scoots you got into this, because I came into the scene when it was Scoots is here, everything's fixed, just like Gunrun. Gunrun's here, everything's fixed. How did you get started with this?
Well, production stuff in particular. Growing up, I was kind of involved in drama in my high school and acted in a few plays, but then very kind of quickly realized that. Kind of behind the scenes, like stage managing, doing the lights or whatever. Very small little school, but I that was funner to me than like being like an actor.
You didn't look like Brad Pitt either or anything like
that. Yeah, and again, like
I,
just,
I can totally get it.
All those things. I was actually, taller back then. So like I directed our senior play, that kind of stuff. So I was always involved in like how the stuff got made. Did some stuff in Ashland at a couple of like Shakespearean things. But again, behind the scenes stuff, right? Stagecraft and all that kind of crap. But anyway, fast forward years later of being a game player and all this stuff, literally to like 2001, 2002-ish, maybe a little before, and guys like DJ Wheat and guys like Red Eye and Tossbot and Carmack and all these characters are starting to talk to me. And they're starting to radio broadcast video games. And I'm like, well, this is fucking cool. This is like sports radio, right? He's in my ear. I've tuned in to watch it on my Half-Life TV or on my Quake World, all that kind of shit, and then I was into Counter-Strike. So, again, I was all over listening to the Counter-Strikers. And in that game, you drove your own Half-Life TV, you drove your own camera, and you listened to the guys talk in your ear, and it was fucking perfect, right? Best of both worlds. So guys like me would be like, oh, let me set up over here over catwalk and let me watch them all come into the, in your own little, making your own little movie, right? No one else watching your Half-Life TV. I was working for Gotfrag eventually. That led to saying, hey, these guys are starting to do video. We cover Counter-Strike. Can we do some video? Which led to Gotfrag TV, which led me to starting to actually produce with a couple other, again, a core team of guys that really had that excitement that you see with the ESLs and DreamHacks. We were like, how the fuck do we do this? How do we do instant replay? How do we do a scoreboard? How do we do this shit? It doesn't exist. How do we edit the Half-Life TV GUI? And did that for several years, led me to MLG. They probably hate me now. I led them down the TriCaster road, right? Now they're fucking hate my gun. Because now it's not the tech, right? But then it was. It was the tech then, yeah. Man.
Do we have you to blame for like about $200,000 of their debt, their current debt.
I didn't tell them to buy five of the fucking things, right? I didn't tell them to buy them all.
Dude, how many did they buy? 20,000?
I think they own like five different ones, different sizes, different variety.
Wow.
And again, they probably didn't pay retail anyway. But anyway, that led me to – so that probably leads me to MLG for a little while, which then led me to EG. And again, at Gotfrag TV – we had a studio with literally the similar setup I have here now. We could do graphics. We could do, we had a TriCaster, green screen, all that shit. We eventually were able to monetize the Gotfrag TV one enough to move it into a little bit bigger space, kind of its own little space. But eventually MLG closed shop. I moved it all kind of what I didn't give back to them, which was pretty much everything. Get on a truck to New York. I came back and went, what the fuck do I do? I like that. Like, this is what I want to do. I like producing shit. Bought my own TriCaster, not the one I have now, but bought a cheaper one. Again, back in the days of standard def, 480 was the shit! 480! 480 was – you show a stream in 480 right now, like no one – like you're – no one's watching. But that was like, oh my god, this is 480. Are you kidding me? 480. So kind of rebuilt my own studio. I join EG. I go, Alex, I got this shit. We should use it. We start making tips and tricks. We start doing Masters Cups. Fast forward to now basically with roughly – my own gear, but roughly the same setup. And doing a little bit of freelance directing. I've only done one freelance gig so far since I left EG, and that was the MLG Dallas gig. I want to do more of it. Hope I can. And that's where I sit right now.
Cool. Well, guys, why don't we take a quick break? I forgot we were going to take a break before all this, and then I just kind of got reminded of it. So let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll maybe just continue a little bit of this and then maybe get a few questions from you guys for these three. But okay, we'll be right back.
I want to know about the same question to these two guys, Elliot and Trance, how they got here.
That sounds good.
Are we muted on stream now?
It came out of nowhere.
Are we muted?
All right, we are back. Hopefully you guys had a nice little break there, just really quick. But I think, Scooch, you wanted to kind of ask the same question to these two that they just asked.
Yeah, I'm really interested to know, you know, how these two guys got, because we're very much kindred spirits, I think, in our production porn love. Interesting to know how they both got to their respective spots. How about you first, Trance?
All right. How did I get into all this? It's basically, I would say, I'm kind of self-taught. Like everything I do these days, I didn't have a background in production, media production, or whatnot. By trade, normally I used to be a system engineer, so I kind of like tech already. Yeah. I used to do the 9-to-5 job and whatnot. And then one day, I watched a stream, a Quake live stream. I was into Quake, and I was like, "Holy shit, I really like this!" And then I got talking to the guys, and I'm like, "You know, you need a helm or anything?" It's like, "Oh, sure, we could use another streamer." So I started broadcasting on my own from my bedroom. And back then, of course, XSplit had just been launched. It was like really, really early days of XSplit, which, again, I cannot emphasize how much it helped the whole media, like live streaming phenomenon, XSplit itself, because it just made it so much easier. In the past, you had to use that the VH multicam with FMLE and all the other crap, and it was like really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, so XSplit was the first one. But
or TriCaster. Kind of,
guys, yeah. Well, who had the budgets for
it? You can afford it. Dude, yeah. Jeez. Nice.
Scoots has so referral like, oh, codes is... on hand.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, well, this is really cool. We had a live stream premium account. I think the guys at Level Up TV, that's where I started, they earned it. So they had a premium account. You didn't have to pay for the extra whatever.
Nice.
So it's like, okay, this is great. And then at the same time, I got in touch with the guys at XSplit, right? Because I just kept sending them emails with suggestions. Because, like, you know, I would like this, I would like that, I would like this, and I would like that. And they're like, oh, wait a second. You use this a lot for gaming-related shit? I'm like, yeah. It's like, how many people do you think? It's like, holy shit. And then they just discovered, like, wow, this is really being used by gamers and whatnot. Because initially it was not built like that. And then they're like, you know, we want to talk to you. So I kind of started working for XSplit part-time, Split Media Labs, just giving them feedback and suggestions and be like, you know, well, I would like this and that, and I think this would be good. I even made some tutorials for them and whatnot. So basically that was my kickstart into the whole streaming. At the same time, I was learning more and more and more about it on my own. Then I got in touch with James Toogood, who I owe a lot for me being in the current position in esports. And then DreamHack Winter came around, and the Quake guys needed, you know, it needed a stream. So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do this for you. So I bought all the equipment myself, like a small shitty audio mixer, two microphones, a webcam. I had my XSplit. I had my know-how. I'm like, fuck it, I'm gonna give it a shot. It's like my first time ever producing something.
Hell yeah,
that.
Dude. Hell yeah.
I packed it all. I drove. I was living in Belgium at the time, so I drove there. Well, I was moving already to Sweden because of my girlfriend, but I was literally quitting my job. Like, had nothing. Okay, so I was like, you know, I'm gonna give this a try for fun. I was not getting paid nothing. Like, I paid everything out of my pocket. And we did that event, the Quake stream. It ran really great. We got really good feedback from it. People loved it. Even Robert stopped by for a drunken interview, as always. and then via James, of course, and whatnot, he was like, they were like, oh, wait, you're moving to Sweden. You're going to be in Sweden. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, we should talk. So I started working with DreamHack a bit then after that event, and on the side doing some contractor work here and there. Fast forward a bit more, let's say a year or so, like 2011 and whatnot, James and myself got in. Well, he was already planning a studio, right? But the timing was not there. He was just in between jobs and whatnot. He was broke. I didn't have a job either. It was like, okay. And then the whole Twitch thing came up, which initially allowed us to go to Twitch as contractors as an EU team. They were looking to expand in Europe. So I would be kind of the tech guy, similar to what Gunrun is in the US. And James would be the outreach guy. And we also had his brother Will doing all the events and lounges and whatnot. So that got assigned. That was a big Kickstarter for us. And moving on from that point, the studio was there, was on the plan. So we're like, okay, we're going to make the studio now. We got to build it. And he was like, James told me, I know you can make this happen. Just make it happen. Tell me what you need. We'll buy it. And basically, that's when we got the studio up and running while doing also my Twitch job next to it. And from that point on, I think just everything kind of exploded. I completely forgot what a 9-to-5 is. I've been in love with esports, production, whatnot. Like, I couldn't go back to a 9-to-5 job. I'm just saying right now. I'm like so out of touch.
9-to-5 for suckers, man.
You're here, man.
Yeah, in many ways, I feel privileged and whatnot to be working and getting paid in this industry because I know how hard it is. And, you know, I don't take it for granted any day. And that's what I think should most people should do, like strive to, you know, better self. What can I do? You know, what can I do to take to the next level? So I've always kind of looked at it like that. And I guess this is where I am now. But it was most, like I said, self-taught and passion. I really loved doing this shit. I loved, you know, working with this stuff. I wanted to learn about it. And that's all it took me. It took me like 2.5 years and I could do this. So if anybody out there is watching, just keep doing what you are. Try to do your best. Somebody eventually will notice you. Somebody eventually will pick you up. And that's about it.
Elliot, how about you, man? Backstory time.
Yeah, it's just what he said. Self-taught. Just do it. Day 9 advice. If you want to do something, just go fucking do it. And it was, I was the tech nerd in high school. I was always a guy like playing on the computer at long hours. I was on the Tiger TV crew. That was our high school TV production. And it was a 4 switcher thing. And I even managed to screw those switches up. So I wasn't particularly good at it then, but I was having fun doing it. I went to political headquarters and I was a tech guy there. I always set up their computers and networks and phones. And I at least knew how to ask the right questions if I didn't know how to do something. So I just kind of stumbled my way into it. When NASL came up, just after Clash of the Titans, I had talked to Russ earlier. He said, we're doing this thing next week. We're going to get through that and then I'll talk to you. And so I interned there for a month and it became, hey, we're going to need someone to work the switcher. You play StarCraft, right? I went, yeah. So So I started. And eventually from there, I just kind of did it piece by piece, learned each thing along the way. And I remember looking up Day 9's FMLE blog. It was like 9 pages of really mundane tech specs of how to get this thing to do what you want it to do.
And I read that, too.
I was like, this is what we have to do to broad. I thought it was just going to be a button and it was going to be a thing that you... But no, it turns out there's other boxes for 5-digit numbers that can stream with the one button. But for now, we're going to use this stuff. And it was... And now it's just been 4 seasons later and it's been learning a little bit more every single season. So, yeah.
Yeah, so actually, I'm just going to bring in a viewer question. James Pollock actually has a question, and he says it's mostly for trans, but I think it's pretty good for everybody. He just wanted to ask about learning production. He says, I've been involved in running a show and casting FPS for over a year and have learned a lot. Recently, I saw The Good Show where Too Good was explaining how the Beyond the Summit cast should fix their lighting by moving their desk forward and putting a light behind them to prevent blending into the background. How do you learn stuff like this that must be so simple for those who know it?
Kind of.
It's probably just through trial and error. I mean, that's probably how Gunrun figured it out.
Yeah.
I mean, it begs for a good question, too, because, Trance, you were talking about setting up the studio, you know, at some point in your background there. How much of the studio is not the tech part of it? Like the lighting, and I mean, I know you have like a.
We actually got some help when we did the lighting from some guy James knew. I'm bad at lighting and whatnot. I'm like, I don't even want to, you know. There's a whole nother level sometimes there, and I'm just like, you know, I don't care about that much. That's why the studio sometimes is bad and whatnot. But we kind of know what we need to do to improve it. But when we actually started initially, James knew some guy. I really want to remember his name. Maybe he can mention it in chat. And he worked with stuff like this for TV and whatnot, so he knew exactly, oh, you need this kind of lights and this, and you need to place them here and here, and that helped to begin with. But other than that, like the whole set, the way it looks, the, you know, the shots and whatnot, that was basically kind of like all of us. The whole poster wall was James' idea, for instance. Like he knew, he took something in his head and was like, I want to make this, I want to make it look good and cool, so I'm just going to put all these posters, get a TV in there. So everybody kind of like, you know, chipped in, and it was like ideas, what's going to work, what's not going to work, and then we just do it, and then we look at it, and if we like it the way it looks on a camera, we're pretty sure other people are going to like it as well. So unless you have really, 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 really bad tastes, you can't fuck this thing up.
Chris, we've talked about this before. I think that's one of the biggest problems is that people put on shows and they don't spend the time to actually watch their own show later and kind of analyze it and ask themselves, what could we have done better? You know, we do that almost every time.
You don't watch the shows. I watch the freaking shows.
Well, yeah, but then you and I talk about it. I don't. Yeah,
it's because I talk to you about it.
Okay, oh, yeah, sure, you call me.
Sure. But to answer the guy's question, I mean, there's a ton of YouTube videos and stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's like, tons of resources. Because, again, like as Trance said, you know, we talk about that we want to and we should aspire to innovate and excite beyond what the box in our living room does for us if you want to look at sports or any other entity, because we have the ability to, right? Because, again, the money will come if we don't look like ESPN. We don't have to be that buttoned up, right? I don't like the ties necessarily in the shirts. I certainly don't like the T-shirts with the jacket over it. Like a lot of stuff, like, we just don't need to do, right? And I think – but if you look at basic production stuff, tons of YouTubes on three-point lighting, how to light for green screen, how to light for interviews, how to soft light, how to do all those things for lighting, easy resources. And basic things like, you know, the law of thirds, right? Like, if I see one more – fucking broadcaster desk that does this to me. Like, there's a law of thirds for a reason, right? And it's the natural eye. It's how photographers work. It's how video works. Like, so you can look at a lot of shit that a lot of other people have done over the years and go, okay, kind of like that, you know? And I don't get it. I've seen some of these past productions and I've looked at their shot and went, are they not seeing what I see? Because I'm not, like, this is obvious. There's a box in the way. I see shit. like, so there's a lot of very obvious stuff, right? And I would say the other big, big, big thing is don't neglect your audio. Bad audio will kill the best-looking video, best-produced whiz-bang thing. Bad audio would kill landing with humans on the moon, right? Nothing worse than bad audio. Well, nothing works.
Talk about bad audio, because you know bad audio. That's true. but what is the degree of bad audio? I mean, obviously no audio is the worst, but define bad audio. I mean, is, like, are we talking about like these headset audio, like this kind of headset?
I think there's, and again, maybe this gets back to that question of, do people understand the different things they're watching sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. When you tune into an MLG or an ESL, they're wearing broadcast headsets or broadcast lapels or Countrymen, or these guys wear Countrymen's, right? On The Good Show, they don't use headsets for one, and they don't use any sort of gaming mics at all, right? Mm-hmm. You've got some productions that are mixing headset, maybe mixing mic, and it's night and day. And I've had these conversations with guys that, like Kim Rahm at SteelSeries, right? When I was with One More Game TV and EG, SteelSeries was a huge sponsor, right? And I've known Kim Rahm for a decade probably, right? Well, he tunes into one of the first shows, and he's like, why is DJ Wheat not wearing my headset? And Wheat is he's producing the show, right, from his house. I'm wearing a SteelSeries headset, and we eventually get one to Slasher. But Marcus isn't wearing one because, A, he's putting everything through a big mixer, and you cannot put all these inputs and this headset, or he could not wear this headset and put it through his mixer, and they're not built for it, right? They're built for PC cards and all those things, right? And once I explained that to him, different range, all these different things, and I said, on top of that, Kim, no offense to your headset, forget the mic for a second, he can't monitor the stream the same way wearing your $80 headset, which is great for gaming combined unit, as he can wearing a $200 Sennheiser headset, right? To hear the mix, right? It's very important. So if you're forced to have to use gaming stuff, it is what it is. But if you're not, then you want to get on a mixer, you want to get a good podcast mic, you want to get a good headset mic. I use a Sennheiser headset mic even when I'm gaming, when I stream, because it's easier for me. Instead of having a microphone sitting somewhere, right, I just put the damn headset on, right? Two birds, one stone. Does it look the greatest? No. But it sounds okay. I can pump whatever I want to, and my microphone is broadcast quality microphone. So it depends on what you're trying to do with your content, Chan Man. If you're trying to just stream with your buddies, then yeah, use your gaming headset, use XSplit, do your thing. If you're trying to monetize at all, get that upgrade going. Because, again, it all has come down cheaper. Little mixers are cheap. Little real broadcast, you know, blue microphones or whatever. Cheap, cheap, cheap these days in comparison. Because, again, bad audio, you know, and again, we can't get rid of Skype these days for these kind of shows, but that fucks us. And again, getting back to what we never talked about, one of the coolest things that Good Studio has going for them is they don't remote. They're all in the room.
Yep.
You know, Wheat has to remote his guests in. A lot of people, you're remoting all of us in. There's just something instantly about me being able to go, Trance, shut the fuck up. And he's right over there, right? The audience laughs. It's a vibe you can't. Again,
well, that's
and that helps
thing.
With,
I don't see. Yeah.
But that
that's
helps you with your audio, right? All your guys are wearing Countrymans, although Apollo keeps breaking his, right? Again, it just ups it, right? You don't have to worry about a gaming headset, right? And they're all similar. Like, I'm not dogging Kim Rom's SteelSeries, although he's not with SteelSeries anymore. They're all that similar level of impotence when it comes to what you hear and how the mics work. And they're just not the same as this, right? $250 for this.
Yep.
$80 for this is what it is.
Get what you pay for.
Audio, that's audio, it. Audio.
Yep. Ellie, you were going to say something about audio?
I mean, it's deceivingly harder than video. Like, surprisingly harder. Like, we plug in the exact same cables, the exact same equipment at a live event, and season one, we're debugging left-right audio issues for the next 30 minutes just to figure out what bug got introduced, did a cable slip, did... And it's one of the more frustrating things to deal with, obviously, from my perspective. So... I mean, production in general, if you want to get into it, you should be the guy that played with Legos and liked doing stuff on your own. No one that I know that got into production did so because they went to broadcasting school for 30 years as a professional in the industry and gave up a huge salary to go to any esports kind of thing. If they're it's consulting, sure, but on a daily basis, these guys are just so expensive and not where we are, so... Yeah. It's amazing the difference between, like, Skype we all crap on, but Skype is already like a video conferencing thing for video for computers. That the next step up is like having studios in remote locations and cable companies and CNN beaming that signal to a main studio.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy how the level just goes from here to here so quickly, and it's like that's all we have, and we have to push that to the limits to really have fun. And anyone who's sitting there on their own trying to figure out how to do a plug-in and XSplit and do some cool stuff, like I heard a Tribes Ascend guy the other day showing off replays on his own PC at home just because he had a small encoder and he could replay the file. Like, that kind of stuff is really cool in terms of innovating stuff that you want to put yourself out there and say, hey, look, I can do this.
Yeah, definitely. So any of you folks that have questions for any of us, go ahead and start typing them out, or you can send it to me on Skype. We're probably not going to do call-ins just because it's been crazy today. I don't feel like having to do series again. Okay, yeah. Guys. All right,
well,
so
and I think one thing for sure is, you know, knock on some doors and do some volunteering, right? Because we all are interested in possibly, again, I do less like work like these guys do on a daily basis right now. But again, good help is hard to find, right? And we always lament about, you know, there's an esports journalist dilemma with, like, no one wants to write. There's nothing in it. It's a hard sell to get people motivated for very long. You know, try getting really behind the scenes where no one knows who you are, right? That there's no – you're not going to get the public love. So you got to be into production fucking porn and, like, figuring shit out. And, like, at the end of the day going, no one fucking knows it, but, man – pulled off a pretty good show,
dude,
right
we
there.
We know it. We fucking know it.
No,
that's
but I mean, in general, like,
shit.
Because it's nice to see you starting to see, like, the observers are getting love. Like, guys like Atabisi who are driving a camera, which is very important these days, right? We need those kind of things. So, volunteer, knock on some doors. Like, there's guys in chat, you know, to toot my horn and Slasher's horn and Marcus's horn. There's three guys that have full time gigs, not because of us, but they did hang out with us, and maybe we pushed them in the right direction. Fishsticks did a couple events for us, for Wheat and I, and Rod when we were live on 3 Productions. Now a full-time guy, big gig, Twitch TV, et cetera, right? He kind of tucked under Slasher's wing when it came to, like, the social media of our productions and while we were live on site. Gunrun came and got yelled at by me and did whatever I asked him to do and adjusted cameras and readjusted cameras and then readjusted cameras and then readjusted cameras for 2 days. And AJ, who now is one of the owners of Level Up Productions in the fighting game tournament, again, sat next to me, got yelled at about graphics. Like, but we didn't pay them shit. They came, first one, they bought their own tickets and everything, but they wanted to, like, hang out. And now I think we've helped push them and realize that there was something here. I mean, a Gunrun brain cells far supersede anything I fucking taught the kid. That's for damn sure. But, again, maybe they don't go down that road. They don't go, production's really cool. Maybe they don't land at Twitch, those two. I don't know. So, and I think we can do a better job on our side in maybe grabbing a few of these bodies and going, yeah, you want to, like I, for better or for worse, like, Conrad is in the trouble he's in right now in California because he sat next to me for a while, right, under EG. He's the guy that's doing the directing of the D2L stuff, right? but you know, he's dealing with encode issues and stream issues, you know, and he's all of it by himself. So, you know, volunteer, ask questions. I definitely always will answer questions if I can. My workflow is the least one you're likely to go down, unfortunately, because of the TriCaster, and I need to fix that for my own good. But yeah.
If that goes down, a volunteer's not going to help you.
Yeah.
and our
side pays support, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm screwed. My TriCaster goes down.
I will say that volunteers who are really good that take our minds off of doing extra things that we don't have the time to focus on are very rare. If you have 10 volunteers, one of them will be a guy that you can trust with a big thing. And if you can be that guy that gets relied on, you're going to be the guy we talk to on Skype and get internships and help us, because those guys, the gems, are really hard to find. And that's something, if you get really good in your area, volunteer and put the time in like that, you'll get noticed, because we need a lot of people like that.
Yeah, it's amazing how much you could learn just going to your first event too, and just being a sponge. Oh my god, I can't even imagine, right? Okay, guys.
I don't condone like being a volunteer all your life. I think we know that that's not feasible anymore.
Oh,
but
please,
again,
don't.
Again, if all these studios that are opening, and again there are plenty that are opening, with, you know, around, are going to need bodies if they are going to be sustainable and just cranking out content. Takes people, more than just the talent.
Something we're looking at, Scoots, actually. That's been the thing that Heaven Major, one of the things we've got going on in the background. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's what this show I've been doing is all about, the Heaven and Hell thing. It was like we wanted to kind of like just see, like we put it off for so long because we were like, don't do it in the bedroom, do it in the studio, make it look good. But then I was like, if we keep waiting, we're going to really miss the video boat anyway, which we already kind of have. So we started doing the show basically just to fuck around and try out some ideas, content related. But eventually we're going to be moving that into a studio kind of setting and producing some new content. So we're going to be fucking no doubt wanting to get some volunteers to fucking work to death. So people can keep in touch with me about that. I'll keep them posted.
Well, why don't we end with I'll let you both. I'll let both of you guys, since you guys haven't. Just our co-hosts, John and Richard. Why don't you guys ask them a question each? Maybe anything you want, since I've been talking.
Question each.
Yeah.
Right. For Trance, the good studio has already been kind of heralded as being very innovative and you know, kind of a pioneering, I guess would be the word. Do you have any plans to do any more kind of outlandish content, the kind of stuff we've not seen in esports before, you know, like, I don't know, an esports sitcom, something like that.
Sitcom?
Wow. Not necessarily.
Okay.
You've got the characters in the house for that. You know, Semler would be brilliant.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. I think at some point we're joking around the idea of literally being sort of a Big Brother kind of thing within the house, as in 24/7.
Oh,
but
God.
Yeah, but then we know it was more of a joke.
Just the cat. How about the cats? Can we just have 24/7 cats?
Yeah, we could put some cameras on the cats, have them, you know, run around. Sure, that'd be fairly innovative. But
be surprised the number of people who tune in for that.
Component to the question, in the sense that, you know, I think we're going about as far as we can go with just talking about the game. You know, we've seen it kind of. You know, we've got the casual version when we're all on the couch. And we're all being irreverent and taking the piss out of it. We introduce alcohol into the mix, and we've got the very professional at the other end. But really, what we need is some sort of something a little bit different again. So something that exists within the esports space but has an outside element of it. And I can't think of anyone better. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can't think of anyone better to do something purely on the grounds of just entertainment than the good studio. So, do you guys honestly have any ideas for some new and exciting content?
Yeah, the thing is we have changed a bit of the format of the shows that we run.
Yeah, they're 4 hours long now.
Instead
of 2 hours,
we gave up trying to keep it on 2 hours. It's like impossible. But in general, we're trying to look into other kinds of shows that we could, you know, go into, do, and you know, whatnot. But I can't say at the moment that I'm like, oh, yes, we have this next great thing already planned out or something in the books that's coming out or not. We usually just, it literally is, we come up with something and then almost next day we do it kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so if you see
yeah.
some crazy shit happening, it probably was planned last night. That's how the whole studio even started its first broadcast. The first broadcast was shit wasn't done. Like, again, 5 minutes before going live. Like, TV
standard.
Was not put in place. Yeah, standard.
Fuck,
so
it.
Like,
fuck it, we'll do it live, baby. Fuck it.
Exactly.
Well, that's but I just, yeah. in my opinion, what you said, Richard, is we do not want to force stuff. We're not, you're complete opposite of guys trying to force stuff or pre-plan too much. So if someday, usually James has these retarded, crazy ideas, sometimes they're good and they work, sometimes they're like, what the fuck? So if next time something comes up and you see it happen, you know that shit that, okay, just popped up. But we don't want to force it. We don't want to try and, you know, no. So we'll see. We'll see what the future
brings. Because, you know, I think it's interesting. Like, you know, people have all this kind of reverence and fondness for stuff like, what was it, fucking Pure Pwnage. You know, like the whole, creating characters like FPS Doug. And it was just something, I mean, that was actually really ahead of its time. Like,
way ahead of its time. Jesus.
Yeah, and it's remember, you know, is it a bit dated looking back now? Probably, maybe, but I don't know. I think, you know, we're ripe for something like that, some sort of lampoonery, people doing stuff in characters. Because one of the things that annoys me most of all about esports is when they say, oh, he's in a persona. Oh, that's the Idra persona.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the Athena persona. It's not a persona. They've just stripped away the non-douche elements of themselves. That's not creating a persona. You're not creating a fucking character, you know, like when you just act like one entire thing, like when you just act like an ass and say, oh, it's a persona, it's not a persona. Persona is obviously something completely different and removed from yourself. We talk about it a lot in esports, but really there aren't any, you know. It's just I either act like a dick or I don't, and that's about as, you know, sophisticated as it gets. So I'd like to see some, you know, people pushing the envelope a bit more in terms of content and what we actually try out. And I'm sure it'll flop and maybe be underappreciated now. But again, maybe we can look back in 3 years and be like, actually, that was fucking great. And someone can, you know, pick up the idea. And
I think we actually see some interesting things on YouTube. We just don't see that many things on live stream. You know what I mean? People can prepare and, you know, do all these kind of interesting things with editing and that sort of thing on YouTube, right? So
and I think what it comes down to, Richard, if you think about it, like, most of our content that comes out of our neck of the woods is sports related vibed in some regards,
that's
right?
True.
And like, if you look at what's Felicia Day's The Guild, right? Incredibly popular gaming fake web episode, you know, it's a written, they're actors, right? They're acting parts. So you're kind of saying take some of these people and again, pure pwnage them a little bit. Are we all afraid to because we're too sporty and we don't do that in sports? Like, I wonder why no one has done that kind of wacky shit. Like, I all start thinking of, like, Red versus Blue, the Halo shit, right? Like, we all, like, regardless of how goofy they're being in DreamHack or how crazy and wild they are at ESL after hours, we're still not doing the shit you're talking about, right? And I wonder... Yeah. I wonder why that is.
The reason we're not doing it is because for years we've been chasing this fucking professional wet dream, and we think we need to be like television. We need to be like ESPN Sports Center. You know, we hold ourselves up to in esports to a set of standards that aren't really necessarily esports specific. One of the great things about esports is that we have this close tie to the community everyone who works in esports wakes up every day and knows it's faintly ridiculous. As a man in my 30s, I know it's a faintly ridiculous career to have. You know, I know when I talk to or interview a 16-year-old fucking StarCraft 2 prodigy, you know, there is a voice in the back of my head saying, what the fuck are you doing, Richard? What are you old enough to pick his dad on the estate you grew up on? Why are you doing this? You know, but like, equally, there's something there that keeps me wanting to work in it, and I want us to reach the promised land. But I think the people that got into positions of power and and got the big sponsors and made the money. They view the promised land as something very different to people like myself. And that is, you know, I want it to be something unique and entertaining, and we can all laugh at the bullshit. You know, we can laugh at the bullshit and celebrate what's great about it. Like, everyone's right to be weird. Everyone's right to be a fucking geek, right? You know, like, yeah. It's not a bad thing. But you're right. You know, I see the sports jackets over the T-shirts and, you know, like,
Now, let me ask you a question. And again, I obviously I'm ex-EG. Are you talking at all at, like, the content, like Jeffrey Vincent Robinson, his interviews and his, like, that, some of the wacky shit EG is doing? Is that at all that vein of kind of humor, or are you talking something totally different? Because a couple, Axiom has done a few, like, fun, wacky things. Like, what?
Here's the thing. It's the difference between having a genuine, reverential application to the subject you're lampooning and being funny about. So Pure Pwnage, great example. You know, everyone who's played Counter-Strike gets the, you know, the guy who takes it way too serious and screams fucking boom headshot all the time.
Yeah.
It was such a well-observed piece of writing about that community, so it works. But what I don't like to see, and what I guess the community feel the same way, it's probably one of the rare examples where me and the community are in sync, I don't want to see that gimmicky shit. Where it's just wacky for the sake of being wacky because we want to go viral. And I hate that fucking term. Like, again, for anyone who if you hear what esports people talk like behind the scene, you would fucking cringe. You would cringe yourself till your back broke. You wouldn't believe it. Oh yeah, it totally went viral. You know, it's like, oh, fuck off, man. You got some YouTube hits. It didn't go viral. Let's be honest, right? You're talking about something completely different. You're not a marketing guru because you had a bunch of people come out and make a tit of themselves, right? It's not, you're not a genius, you know? I think that's the thing I don't like. Like, when something's gimmicky and it's an obvious fucking gimmick, like, we just want to get hits gimmick, or something that's really smart and intelligent and well written and just so happens to be funny. And I just feel like, right, we're talking about we need producers, we need journalists.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Creative people who have got the balls to try something out different without worried about the cost of failure, be it financial or community buy-in. We don't have enough of that right now.
Here's an idea. I'm going to give it to you and Heaven Media, right? Although I've tweeted it a few times. I'm not sure if you guys got a show called Talk Soup in Europe at all, where it's a show where they literally just talk about all the crazy, stupid shit that happened on all the other talk shows that week,
yep.
Right? And they show little clips. It's like a Tosh meets, you know, ribbing the talk shows, right? And there's so
we got Harry Hill's TV burp.
That's what we were talking about.
Okay.
Harry Hill's TV burp, yeah.
Perfect, because there's so many podcasts, no offense to this one, that are happening now. Like, I almost think that someone could do a half-hour show every week of taking the piss out of all these shows, because every show is going to have a sound bit here or there that you go, this week on the DJ Wheat Montel show, you know? And again, that's that funny, like, poke, have some fun, not super serious, not tonight in the GSL we had Hero, you know?
It's booze and woos, but...
I think you're right. I think I think some people have stopped making fun of themselves, and maybe we're all taking.
Well,
I mean,
that's
all
the thing.
Taking
a
little too
serious
sometimes.
Of cash, right? Yeah, exactly. The minute there's an influx of cash, everyone thinks the way to impress people who've got the money is to you know, get all suited up and let's all act super sensible. This isn't a super sensible product. Esports is about arrested development. You know, it's about video games. It's about reaching out to inner
it's
child.
About chicken,
you know,
like, dance.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's about all this fucking dumb shit, and you know, at the same time, there is this key. There's this little thing running through it that it could be a sport. It could be, but it isn't. It's a sport like no other. And what we don't do is you can't treat it just like a sport. You can't. It's got too many absurdities inherent in it at the moment. We need to treat it like something completely unique.
Robert from DreamHack says this all the time. And I think this sums it up. This exactly sums up how we all should be. And I imagine I'm a little too serious sometimes. We are deadly serious about not being serious.
Yeah.
That rings really true on so many levels sometimes, you know? And maybe that alone is like if MLG just like loosened the tie a little bit, got a little crazy,
it's
got a little fun.
It's because it gets back to sports, because sports are super serious. But the thing about our sport is that it's gaming too, and gaming is not super serious, right? So I think we're way on the side of
like
sports.
Like Super Serious Sports meets Wipeout and meets American Ninja.
Dude,
Challenge.
American Ninja would be awesome. Oh, man.
Yeah,
dude,
but a lot of what we've done is like develop. We're still working on the original product.
Yeah,
where sports and all the other guys have. We're still working on this original ball. Like, there's a lot of room for everyone to be creative outside of that. And I know a lot of guys have been thinking, but even stuff like we saw TV shows like WCG Ultimate Gamer, where they're like tying their hands behind their back and making them race a track with their feet, or like stuff that like gets crazy, but we're not sure if it's going to work. It's hard to figure out what the balance is that's going to make people actually entertained and watch, and what way is it going to go? Is it going to go from the general public watching more esports stuff more, or is it going to enhance that these guys are watching esports and now we're watching the stories behind it and all of that? So it's a hard balance to get right.
Do we really want to see Jeff Robinson playing DDR? I mean, is that what we want to see? All right, let's John. So that was your one question, Richard. So how about John?
I just used the question to leap off into a rant that I'd been sat thinking about. I didn't get to talk for 15 minutes, and I hate that. So
that's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Reminds me of Live on 3. Oh, the salad.
I had a question for Elliot. Just with the change in kind of direction that NASL is taking, are you seeing some new directions that you guys are going to have to take production-wise? As you know, I mean, it's a whole new game from what you guys have normally dealt with in the past. So it's definitely going to change the way you guys do things. And I'm just going to say it is an absolutely boring game to watch. So you guys are going to have to certainly be creative. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to fluff it. It is absolutely horrendously boring to watch.
Plus one.
And a lot of StarCraft guys, it's not going to be their thing. But there are going to be a group of people who the nice part about getting to go into this game with basically no NA production around it is that we have the ability to set the broadcast up how we want. We've worked with a lot of guys behind the scenes to get this so that it's not going to be the World of Tanks you're used to watching that you've seen before, that you're playing. It hopefully should be something that if you're interested, if you've seen the game and might consider watching it, you'll sit down for an hour, a couple hours, and watch a broadcast that you'll see is quality. And it's not going to be for everybody, but I do hope people will check it out on the basis of...
Well, I definitely think that good production can make a huge difference. I mean, that goes for almost any game. Absolutely. I mean, people that are new to watching StarCraft II, I didn't get excited because I understood StarCraft II, because I still have a hard time understanding everything that's going on. But it was really the casters and the production and people kind of explaining what was happening that really made a difference. So that is probably going to have to happen.
And that's
a lot.
The onus is on us. And Morgan's put a lot of time into going over it with casters and production. What can we add to this that's not just the game that we feel actually adds value to watching the game, that actually increases everyone's entertainment level across the board? And I will say, I didn't play a lot of World of Tanks going into this. I've learned a lot more about it, and even though we broadcast it before, I hadn't sat down and actually played it. The depth there is something StarCraft guys can appreciate. There's a lot of nuance to the game that's, you know, you can watch football on the level where, like, that guy's trying to get to the end zone, but when you get deeper into it, there's a lot we can go over and build the anticipation, because it doesn't exist if you don't have those good casters and the good production around it. So
that's true. So are the booths going to be these tanks, like in the studio, these little tanks that everybody just kind of sits in with computers in them?
That's not a bad idea.
Can't confirm or deny.
Or remote control tanks that they set up like a little scenario, you know, like when you're watching football on Sundays and they have that little fake football field, and they go through plays. They're going to put down the tanks.
Roddy's having a hard time with his remote controller. Runs over the dog and shit.
It'd be like the robot
I might
wars,
have the very
right?
Most important question of the night, actually. This comes from EdBC.
Yeah, boy.
Will we see Lauren Elise?
Lauren.
Yes, Lauren Elise will be there.
Yes, Mike.
I thought you guys were going to steal her, Christian. What happened to that? James, what happened to that? I thought you were going to steal Lauren from them. All right, so Lauren will still be involved. Good deal. All right, guys. Well, I think we'll wrap it up. Great show, guys. Loved having you guys on. And we got to do this more often, actually. And, you know, Elliot, I don't think anybody, besides the folks behind the scenes, that, you know, Elliot helps a ton of people, okay, guys? And it's great to kind of have you on, and hopefully a lot more people know who you are, the man behind kind of a lot of the NASL production. And Trance, we never see you on a show, so I think it was awesome to have you on, of course.
Sometimes you can hear me scream from the back of the room.
Yeah,
we always hear you.
The best part of the shows out of the studio, especially when you can just, hear him yelling. Because I'm like, oh, yeah.
That guy.
I had a mic, okay? I had a mic, and then James or somebody broke another one in the studio, and we've been lazy to replace it, so I lost my mic. Well, I have now one, but I'm just lazy to pick it up.
How hard is it to order one? Jesus, man.
But that was another thing I wanted to bring up earlier was I think we were one of the few or the first ones that actually involved the producer more than just being a producer pressing buttons, kind of in that kind of setting. Yeah. And I'm not going to talk more game TV or whatever because that's a bit different because it's via Skype, but I'm talking on a physical location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, we should get the producer always involved. I even had a camera at some point, which again got stolen by somebody else. But like the whole concept, I think, just made it what it is today. It's like you have that random crazy guy shouting in the corner and another guy spouting bullshit in the camera and another guy, you know. So it was, it's the whole fun mix.
The Seinfeld of shows.
My highlight of my directing career is still Rick Rolling the entire Gottfried TV crew when Rick Roll was the thing during a Code 5 Counter-Strike tournament. They thought that they were getting Jesuit, who was in Russia. He was in Russia covering for Gottfried, but we were going to Skype him in. It wasn't working. It was terrible. So I'm like, play the video, and like totally Rickrolled Vansilia Midway live on stream, 5,000 people.
Nice.
To this day, still the best. Yeah, and again, I like being part of it too, Trance, because I think that keeps some producers more excited about doing it too, right? Because to me, it's kind of showbiz. Yeah. I don't ever want to be that guy. Like, don't ever ask me to cast or be a host, but like, kind of chiming in and going or playing a wave file or something fun. That is where I get off a little bit, like having that, because again, you're adding that entertainment value. You're not just pushing the button. You're having some fun, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh god, somebody brought this up in chat. What? Oh my god. Okay, I gotta mention this. Okay, speaking of recalling and
yes,
it's true. The only thing is, was not intentional. Okay, so we're doing the Western qualifier for Dota 2. We had like 40,000 viewers on the stream. Somebody, I usually just sit in chat when I get to chill, you know, when the game is actually running, I don't have to press many buttons, and I just click random links they make, like images, fun images and whatnot. They usually do that. And somebody was sneaky enough to hide a screamer, you know, one of those screamers.
It was
a hidden link within a link, right? So it was like Imgur, whatever, GP. I'm like, okay, cool, you can do that. I just clicked it, instant screamer. I was like, fuck!
Oh,
I closed
shit.
It as fast as I could, but it still went out to 40,000 viewers. So that was my
bad. How many people you lose, at that point?
Yep. My bad.
No, but just to round it off, Scott, obviously great to have you on. We we had you on pretty recently too, so it's always a pleasure. And of course, the two guys are always doing this with me. Always a great time. But why don't we do some shout outs and thank yous? Any that you guys have. So Trance, you want to start off?
Yeah, sure. I guess I'd like to thank, first of all the people supporting us, you know, watching our shows, all the content, the good shit has been putting out. Shout out to all the guys in the house, James, Sean, Semler, Mike, Skurf, Wepas, and so on. It's been a blast, you know, working with them up to this day. Hope we can do more stuff. Shout out to Robert in chat for being the crazy ass drunk old man he usually is. He's fun. Don't change. And thanks for you guys for having me on the show. It was a kick. And hopefully I'll see you soon.
Awesome. Scott, you wanna go?
Yeah, well, shout outs to you guys for hosting the show, obviously. I think you're one of the new networks, if you will, that are making really good consistent content. So thank you for that. We'll have you we'll be ripping your shows apart on the edition of Esports Talk Soup soon.
Oh,
I don't have any sponsors or a team to shout out anymore. I would give a shout out to anyone who has done any production with me, and hopefully I didn't piss you off too much. I know I've been lucky enough to work with a lot of good casters and a lot of good, you know, tech people over the years, StarCraft casters. Again, this last MLG was a bucket list for me. I got to check off guys like Total Biscuit, you know, all those characters, right? I've been lucky enough to produce Day 9 and obviously DJ Wheat several different times and the EG guys. So, and again, I got, you know, I'm a very cantankerous guy all the time, and it doesn't, when there's stress, it certainly comes out. I've yelled at a lot of people. Slasher, probably of all the people in esports, shout out to Slasher, because there's probably no one that I've yelled at more harshly in my production career than that guy. Absolutely no one on this planet.
Poor Slasher.
I almost threw him off the stage once. Like, yeah, talk about some stories. And yeah, and again, big shout outs to anyone making content or wanting to make content and everyone watching content, paying for content, paying with it with your eyeballs, you know, because it all, this whole ecosystem grows around all these kind of things, right? And obviously streaming and content around streaming is at the forefront of what we all do these days. And yeah, hopefully you guys see me on some streams in the future directing some shit. We shall see.
Awesome. Elliot, you're up.
Yeah, big shout out to NASL for giving me the opportunity to do this for the last couple of years and really have a good time with it. Our little production crew, Mike, Kylie, me, big shout out to them. Morgan and all the casters, of course, you guys have been awesome. And then finally you, Chanman, thanks for having me on.
No problem. Richard, you want to go next?
Yeah, thanks to the guests for putting out all the content that we get to enjoy and sometimes criticize endlessly to mask our own shortcomings as people. It's always nice. Thanks for providing us with that. No, on a serious note, good studio, great people as well. See them every time I go to DreamHack, real nice. They really cut loose once the stress is over. They get fucked up. The parties there are legendary. Scoots, my former sparring partner turned wingman, you're a constant joy to interact with through through social media.
We've come a long way, haven't we, my friend?
Fuck, man, we certainly have. I was talking about that before we went on the show. So, you know... I think we're the same. I think we are just cantankerous assholes, and it's like when you get past that, there is a soft, gooey center. But for the most part, it is.
This is just my persona, man. That's not.
Yeah, exactly. Right? We created the personas, but told no one it was the persona. So and the other thing I want to say as well, man, NASL like do some fun, you know, they've done some amazing content and some great like production stuff in the past. And probably never get the props that, like, you know, other companies have done. Like, no one really talks about them as, like, you know, benchmark people or whatever. Or whenever we're reaching for a comparison, they don't come. And that probably sucks a bit. So, you know, definitely keep all that up.
All right.
Yeah, well, yeah, just, you know, it sucks to be underappreciated. And obviously, thanks to the co-hosts as well for making me look less stupid somehow.
Okay. Richard, when's your next show?
Well, we make you look less stupid by being stupider than you. Is that the deal? I mean,
no. It's like what you do is you've got. I've noticed now you've got this thing where it's like you can tell when I'm about to fucking go, and you kind of chip in with like, so what we're gonna do is we're gonna move on. like going or some shit. So you guys keep me in check quite nicely. But yeah, my heaven and esports heaven show is gonna be on Wednesday. Still not 100%. What it's going to be about now, because we'd hoped Sundance was going to come on. I see he's on State of the Game. I don't know if it's still going to happen, but you know, much in the same way you guys do, we'll throw something together at the last minute and hopefully it'll work out.
There you go. John.
First shout out goes to Nathanius in the chat. He says he never gets a shout out, so I thought I'd give him one. He's handling the chat today. Then to all of you guys, actually, because I just was sitting here thinking, you know, a lot of what we're talking about, you know, talking about improvements and just talking about, you know, what how we can get things to be better in esports is really all because of all of your guys' efforts in the first place, taking that first plunge to actually try something new. So it's really good. I think we've all been a part of trying something and just seeing it through, and it's kind of helped continue the rise of esports or the rebirth of esports. And then obviously to you, Chris, for always putting on a good show and doing all the hard work. We just get to show up and make fools of ourselves, Richard and I, so that's good.
Whatever.
And a shout out to my guys at to the guys at IGL that continue to put up with my shit. And if only people knew how difficult it is to run startups. I'm not running it, so that's good. But I have to deal with all the craziness that goes with it, so it's good. StarCraft 2 ladders for teams are open at IGL, by the way. So at playigl.com if you want to check it out. So have your actual matches mean something instead of just doing it through Skype. So anyway, that's all I've got.
Cool. My shout outs, just shout out to all you guys, just all five of you guys, just because these are the type of shows that I really enjoy doing. I mean, like, it's kind of the purpose of climbing the ladder, and I don't get to do them all the time. It's not that I don't enjoy the other shows, but these are really the shows that I really like, and getting to like guys like Elliot and Trance, and you know, guys that never, you know, Scoots, obviously, but guys that don't even get a chance, you never see them, right, on shows and stuff like that. So it's really cool to get to hear you guys and how great you guys actually are. I want to give a shout out to just all the viewers. You know, you guys sticking around. It's a long show today, and I know it's been craziness with screen regions and guests that were, you know, surprise guests. So big thanks to Robert too for coming on and filling in a little
bit. Yeah, I was just going to say, we totally missed out Robert and Carmack.
Yeah, exactly. So. Robert and Carmack.
But maybe fuck Carmack for turning up late.
So. Unreal tournament. Maybe you heard it, dude. Out. Unreal tournament is why he like skipped out on half the show. What?
To get blown out.
What?
For that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not even playing. Making maps, guys. Making maps. Okay, so that is
that would be that would be the headliner on your new show, Scoots.
Yeah, exactly.
that sort of stuff.
Exactly. Oh my god, seriously. Anything else? Oh, Star Strikers event. I'm hosting this Sunday. Eight teams. Each team has two captains that are notable pros and personalities, and then the other two are going to be filled by you guys, the community. So. Come and check that out. I'm going to make, I'm actually going to make a video with just talking about the groups and the schedule. And
my money's on Wheat. Wheat and Whack, man. Dude. Whack, Steven, and Wheat, man. I mean, if there's a pro Star Striker duo, it's those guys right now. I heard there's contracts being flown.
But Wheat rages so hard. Yeah.
Chris, Whack is talking so much smack. He better back it up. That's all I have to say. I'm actually not playing in it, but I know a lot of people are practicing and recruiting like mad dogs. So, it's going to be pretty cool to see. Again, I'll be making a video. Actually, I think JP at the end of Save the Game is going to announce the groups for me. Just
nice.
I didn't want to do that. So check that out.
Speaking of non-serious fun shit, right?
Yeah, there exactly. Non-serious fun shit. Star Striker stuff. Like, lots of people love it, so just kind of come together and have some fun with it. I actually had a guy make a bunch of team images, too. Like, kind of fun.
Oh, no.
Photoshop, dude. Yeah, dude, they're hilarious. I'm going to show them. I'll show them in this video I make probably later tonight, but... yeah, so it should be a good time, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, and just come and have a good time. Other than that, let's see, next week, I'm going to try to get Hellspawn on here. I've been kind of talking to him on and off. We haven't had him on here.
Oh,
God.
is
it going to happen and me and Hellspawn going to do a show?
That's
together?
Right. Fuck that me. Is exactly right.
That is the dream.
Exactly right. So.
I've been asking for this a long time. I was once like, we should get Lewis on a show, man. What a good show. But there has to be one else.
We make things happen here, man. I'm climbing the ladder. Wow. So. So anyways, yeah, so I'll try. I mean, last time we talked, he was totally up for it. I just haven't talked to him in a few days. So hopefully look out for that. And VODs are going to be up at youtube.com/ChamManV shortly after. Follow us on Twitter at ChamManV, at @ES_JohnClark, at @Richard_A_Lewis. At Transzor with a zero for the
zero. Just don't even try. It's...
at Sir Scoots and then add VA4NDOR. How do you even pronounce that, dude?
It's not. It's just a thing from a long time ago. Okay. VA4NDOR.
Yeah.
You can find it if you want. Type it in chat.
Exactly. So I'll type in chat in just a second. But that's going to be it for Climbing the Ladder, guys. We will. Actually, I need to get. Hold on a second. I need to get the credits ready. That's one of the things I didn't.
Chan man, stall for time.
Yeah, production value.
Stall. I mean, it's too hard to be host and stall. I mean, it's like that's the one crazy part about stall being host and having the green screen. Oh no. There we go. All right, see you guys next
green
week.
Green screen it. Oh,
yeah. I did green screen it.
There you go. There it is.